I'm sorry, sir.
Jim.
Okay. From live from... Did you want me to go? You go.
No,
you go ahead.
I'm going to do this.
Live from the Film Grok Studios. I'm sorry.
Wow.
I had to try to.
Okay. Go ahead, sir. I apologize.
From the Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City, this is Film Grok. Our film for this week is... The Last Starfighter.
Awesome.
My name is Serge Dalpierre. Today we have...
Jim Usterman.
Yes, the voice. Jim the voice Usterman. And...
Duncan K. Fraser.
Duncan the K. Fraser.
What does the K stand for in that context?
Kirk.
Duncan Kirk?
Almost.
Oh,
that is my dad's first name. You knew that, right?
No, I didn't.
Kirk?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I think I did. I'd forgotten about this.
My actual middle name is Kirkson.
Kirkson? Really?
Really? Mm-hmm. As in Kirk's son. Terribly.
Duncan
terribly,
the K.
Yeah,
Duncan
yeah
the
K. Which gives me a more
I think I'm gonna call
a connection
you,
with Star Trek.
I'm going to call you special, Duncan Special K. Don't. Fraser.
Ooh, Special K. I like Special K.
Okay, I'm not going to.
Should we say something about chip selection?
What about the chips?
Inside joke.
The chips
I love the chips.
The chips are
great.
Okay, just try not.
They're very crunchy.
Duncan, okay,
I enjoy them.
What did I talk to you about?
Don't eat the mic.
Right,
the mic, thank you. Our cue point for this week is for The Last Starfighter, it's real easy. The Universal logo is right up at the front. Pause right at the end as it fades to black. And then when we're ready to go, I'll count down 3, 2, 1, play, and then you can hit play, and then you'll be able to listen to us in sync with you watching The Last Starfighter, or you can listen to this at any one of many different ways, whether you're driving home or from work or driving to work or walking the dog, or Jim's got something funny he thinks he wants to add to this.
No, not at all. I was just remembering The Last Starfighter and when I saw it, you know, when I was very young, and I really love this movie.
Yeah, well, so I was about
for
to ask you,
sure.
Jim, when was the first time you saw The Last Starfighter?
Well, you know, I'm not sure when it was, but I've seen it 4 or 5 times and enjoyed it really every time I've seen it. The only thing about The Last Starfighter that I recall specifically when I first saw it was, wow, these are great effects, and wow, I can totally tell these effects are CGI because they're so crappy.
Nice.
But I mean, it was great, you know, at the same time, it was great.
Yeah.
You know, it was like,
yeah.
Wow. I mean, I really had to fight letting it pull me out of the reality of the movie.
That's how I felt with the Star Wars prequels.
But oh yeah,
mm-hmm.
Oh interesting.
Really,
we can get into that later.
So you're comparing The Last Starfighter to the Star Wars prequels.
Prequel.
In terms of scope of CGI landmarks, yes.
Wow, awesome.
Okay, I'll grant you that one. Yeah,
thanks.
Absolutely, sure. I'll give you that one, Duncan. When did you see this? Considering you suggested Last Starfighter, and I went, ooh,
you mean
good idea.
When did I see it most recently? Or
well,
when
no,
was
no,
the
when
first,
was
time?
First time you saw Last Starfighter. Mm. Well, I know you watch it like once a year. So.
Now, when did it come out?
It was, what was it, mid-80s? What year was it again? Mid to early?
Let me
something
check.
Like, I mean, clearly they greenlit it because of the popularity and everything of the Star Wars films.
We're going to check the inner tubes.
Yes, check the inner tubes. But anyway, probably the first time I saw it was on television, most likely. I actually don't remember the exact first time that I saw it. Probably on cable
on
a few years after it came out. I don't think so because my family didn't take us to movies that often when I was a kid. I only saw
except
a few real key
religious
ones.
Religious or political reasons?
Neither. Monetary.
For monetary.
Yeah.
You grew up
let's
on
add,
the wrong
let's
side
add
of
financial.
The tracks.
Yes. One of those. But no, actually, if you must know, I used to live in Michigan when I was a little kid, and then we moved to Kentucky for my dad to be a preacher, and after that we basically had no money. So... In any case, no, I didn't see it in the theater. I probably saw it on TV, and it made a big impression because, of course, like most of us men who, you know, were kids in the 80s and 90s, we are very into video games, or at least that was a part of the childhood that was, you know, memorable. And this is all about, ooh, what if you're so good at video games, which your mom tells you not to do and hates that you spend money on.
Yeah.
But if I'm really good at a video game, then I can have this giant space adventure where some, you know, cool guy recruits me because of my mad skills.
Exactly. Mom, it's not a waste of time.
Takes me to another galaxy where I fight bad guys in a spaceship. So, no, it was very inspiring. And I was telling Sarah earlier, I do watch this probably once a year, maybe more than that. I just inducted my girlfriend into seeing it for the first time.
Ooh.
About a month ago, I think.
And how'd she take to it?
She liked it.
Good.
She liked it.
Good.
I mean, it's a solid story, you know? It's nothing new story element-wise, but it's solid.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
And in fact, it's been... someone else used this as a method of... Like the CIA was looking for particularly good computer They use that same sort of story.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there's. Yeah, I'm going to mention another source of that. What the story is.
I think I know where you're going with that. But yeah.
Oh, do you know where I'm going?
I think.
Oh, we're going to find out.
Yes, yeah. We will. It'll be exciting.
I saw this in the movie theaters back in
1984. How about that? Look how smooth.
Well, that was nice. There, a nice crunch there, Duncan.
I just don't know how to operate these chips with the microphone. So
there's a learning curve.
I know. Lean away. Just cover the mic. We have some very, very tasty Fritos and salsa today.
No nonsense. These are designer. There's a craft service table and there's a designer foods.
It's a whole.
May
whole
I
thing
say
setup.
That yes, your sir? Hosting skills are just out of this world, Serge.
And what? Anyone who says different know. is.
Yeah. Thanks. They got another thing coming. I'm just saying. Thank I mean, you. This is awesome.
Thank you. Can I continue? When I saw The Last Starfighter for the first time.
In 1984?
1984. I saw in the movies. Nice. I mean, I don't remember exactly, but I remember it was cool to see it. The special effects were like, but I remember reading that they acknowledged it. You know, it was a problem that the CG. It was the first film that really used CG effects like this. Tron had already come out.
Tron
had used. Was Tron after this? Right around the same time.
It was right around the same time. Yeah, in addition to Disney's Tron.
But Tron used a bit CG and a lot of animation mixed with the CG. This was strictly CG that they used. I mean, now we're watching it now. I'm going.
Well,
like,
you couldn't
now
tell just, by looking at it.
Now it just looks like an animatic.
No, it does. It really is. Funny.
It looks like a good animatic, but it still looks like an animatic.
No, yeah, totally. It looks like the unbuilt. Parts of those, you know, when you see the special editions,
right.
Like here's what we were working on first, and these are the changes we made. It's that first or second stage,
right?
The unfinished. Yeah.
So, but it was enjoyable enough, and I vaguely have had a memory, and I just rewatched it very, very recently. And it does have, of course, it draws from its story from Star Wars. Clearly, it's got the whole thing. We'll definitely go into, you know, what beats it hits. Oh, there's a Star Wars one, kind of thing. Of course, the whole Joseph Campbell journey of the hero type mm-hmm. of thing. So it was enjoyable. I mean, I could kind of relate to it because, I grew up when arcades were really big and you'd go and you'd pop in whatever, 25 cents and you'd keep on playing Missile Command or
right,
Galaga
Ditto.
All those, and, you know, before, I mean, I think there was an R20, 2600, but it was better to go to the arcade. Now, of course, you got Xbox 360 and everything else. I mean, why go to an arcade? I mean, you could for some things, but this is all we really had. You know, we didn't have very much. We had the dinky little 2D graphics at home. We had Pong.
Did you have Pong?
Commodore 64 games.
Yeah.
Oh,
we
yeah.
had a
Atari 2600, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
know, I mean.
We had something called, I think, an Omega, or there was something that Motorola put out.
That rings a bell.
Yeah, it was a weird, you actually put a piece of plastic over the television screen. Do you remember this? It had a static, there was a static
memory
piece,
of this.
A piece of plastic that you put over the cathode ray tube,
right.
And the static electricity held this piece of plastic on the screen.
Yeah,
and you could play Pong on the TV, and it had it was so
I remember
primitive,
yeah.
so primitive.
Wow.
But obviously, that was way before this.
Yeah,
I mean, the thing that this thing, you know, can benefits from is the fact that we were all starting to play video games in arcades, and even though this CGI is really, you know, obvious. Compared to what you were seeing in the arcades and such, it was like, wow, this looks almost real, man.
It was worlds beyond what the graphics of the time in video games
were. Oh, yeah, for computer graphics, this was, I mean, this was about, at the time, about as cutting edge as it was.
Yeah.
They had to spin up all the wheels and all the giant computers and all the basements to do this.
Can
you imagine?
But mind you.
The rendering time.
But hang on, I mean, let's look at this. When did Jurassic Park come out? 94?
Okay. Something like that.
Yeah.
10 years later. They had Jurassic Park,
yeah,
which
absolutely
was all,
real,
which
looking.
Was absolutely real looking.
Yeah, good point.
So that's 10
point.
Just 10 years it took to get from what this was to that.
Wow, I hadn't thought about it that way.
Yeah,
that is cool.
So, and even now,
way that they can recreate smoke and water, and fire.
I mean, now from Jurassic Park, now it means like I mean, we don't really see it anymore, but it has gone leaps and bounds up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, you don't see it, and that's actually the best part. You can't really see
right.
the CGI.
Well, that's why it's really successful.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, something like this, if they did remake Last Starfighter, I'm sure some studios, whoever owns it right now, is thinking of doing... Oh, wait. Does
oh,
it,
yeah.
You know what would be similarly groundbreaking, since they already did Tron again, and they did it in the current 3D?
Mm.
If they redid this to have it 3D without glasses, that would be a similar, like, technology shift
time
to release it,
I would say. I want to get into the whole 3D...
Well, no. I don't mean to start a conversation about 3D, but I'm just thinking in terms of times to release it, breakthrough technology, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, I just think in terms of story, because now you could take, you know, the whole thing with our Xbox, instead of being an arcade game,
it could be
Xbox 360 or PSP or any one of those small, you know, whatever game goes out there, and, you know, it could be all over the place, and then you get picked out, and of course you go to the other civilization.
Oh, can you imagine if it was PSPs and all these kids had these little handheld units, and down comes Robert Preston's character, and you actually snap the PSP into the spaceship, so it's absolutely identical controls.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, there are many, many cool ways that you could do a sequel to this.
It would be fun.
And there was actually rumor about a sequel just a couple of years ago, but now it's defunct, I think.
Well, I was just looking up on the interweb there, The Last Starfighter, so I could get the release date, the intertubes, and and it said, the first thing that came up was Starfighter 2 and Last Starfighter the sequel.
Yeah.
On Google search. So that's, I'm interested to know more about that.
I looked through that actually recently because of seeing it again and introducing my girlfriend, and apparently it was rumored in like 2007, I think, and then it just fell off the map. And I really was actually kind of confused. I went back and forth to several different sites, IMDb and some others, trying to find out what happened with it, but it doesn't even have an entry on IMDb anymore.
Oh, interesting. Well, it probably just an idea. I wanted to bring up one thing, then I'm going to get going with the movie. Mm-hmm. Is what this most reminds me of, and I don't remember the chronology of this, but I think there was a story that came up before, like probably around the same time, maybe just after, called by Orson Scott Card, called either Ender or Ender's Game.
Yeah, I think it's Ender's Game.
I think got turned into a novel. But basically, the story is about, there's these kids, and essentially what they're doing is they're playing these video games, and they're shooting, you know, all day long. They shoot these, they're fighting in these whatever video games all day long. But what it turns out, the story is they're actually manipulating fighters halfway across the galaxy to fight this alien race. So it's a real thing. Yeah.
Oh, so they think they're playing a game,
right?
They're controlling these drones or something?
Yeah, basically what it is. It's been a long time since I read that, but it was right around this time. And I think he did write a book based on it.
Hmm.
I read it as a story.
That's a familiar title to me, so yeah. I'd be interested in reading
that. Orson Scott Card. Yeah.
Remind me how that connected to this again? Just chronology at the same time?
It's about the same. I just know because I was in school at the time, and I know a friend of mine introduced it to me and said, hey, you should read some Orson Scott Card. So I read it, and that was one of the stories I read, and it was like in 83 or 84.
It's pretty cool.
So it's right around the same time.
Well, a recent addition in terms of playing games that actually affect real life is a Gamer. Did you guys see that?
No.
With
you and I saw
Gerard
that.
Butler. Did we go see it together?
Oh yes.
I always forget
yes,
who
yes.
I see
I
movies
see
with.
I did. See
and
that.
I liked the concept. There were some parts that were just a little over the top.
I always
thanks for laughing. I always
forget who I see movies with.
I do
because I usually black out
something.
No, because then we saw the preview for Law Abiding Citizen, and then we went to see that.
Oh yeah.
What do you think of that one? I saw both of those actually.
I didn't care for Law Abiding Citizen. Gamer's all right.
Yeah, Gamer's good for like hang out with your buddies, drink beer, and watch something violent kind of thing. There were some good moments, but I feel like there was something about the flow of the story that didn't end up.
It's
working.
The guys who did the Crank movies,
right? Oh God,
yeah,
those are
Crank and Crank Two.
Not familiar. With Jason Statham.
Yeah.
Oh, that Crank.
Shaky cam.
I still haven't seen those.
Oh, those are.
Now that I'm thinking about how the previews look, though, I can totally see the similarity in the shaky
and that's
cam
why
style.
That's why Gamer was like that, because it was them.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Okay, can we get going? We can keep on talking.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Okay, all right. All right, so I'm pointing to the Film Grok projectionist this week. It is Marsha. And
hey, Marsh. Good old Marsha.
Okay, and she's ready to go. So I will count down now. 3, 2, 1, play.
Marsha's good. Did she shave her beard?
Thanks, Marsh.
I think she waxed this time, actually.
I you know, she can hear what we're saying.
I know.
Marsh, I was just kidding.
We have an understanding.
Already I'm impressed.
Right? And by the way,
this
cool
is a great
music.
Beginning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice beginning and very nice music.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels, and if you notice, you start looking at the titles. Of course, now we're backtracking across the universe to the other planet. No, actually, that was the planet,
Ooh, wow.
And we're backtracking to Earth.
How Superman-y.
Well, we see, exactly. The titles are Superman-y, and now the music is Superman-y, too.
Well, you know, with all of the Lucas movies and Spielberg movies and everything around this time, they really brought they really brought orchestral music into vogue with
Craig
adventure movies.
Craig Safin was our music designer.
I do not know, but he did a pretty good job. He's doing the job that they asked him to do. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, this isn't obviously like life-changing music or anything, but it's very effective, and it's not.
It doesn't.
What?
It is basically the Superman theme reworked.
You really think so?
Totally.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a music guy. I wish we had Tim here to comment on that. But
I'm commenting.
I mean, I know. Hey, look.
You may recognize
anyway,
my voice.
What? I don't know music.
No, I'm not saying that.
Do,
I'm just, I have
do.
A different opinion, but you're...
Is that the same moon we saw at Real
School? No. It's just what I'm saying is that it does have the elements of the Superman theme. That's the whole thing.
A lot of music does, though.
No.
I don't think it's fair to say it's a reworking of the Superman theme.
I don't think it's unfair, and I don't think it's an insult.
No,
I don't think it's an insult. That's the whole thing. I think it is a reworking of it. I mean, I think it was intentional to give that feel to it. I wasn't cutting on it. I was just saying it is a reworking of it.
Okay.
And also with the titles, they were definitely suggesting that feel. I mean, I could see the artistic decisions being made that way.
Yeah, I could see that.
I wasn't cutting on it, Dunk.
So Nick Castle is our director, and King Bussell?
King Baggett.
Baggett is our DP.
Actually, he does a really good job on this. It's interesting that this movie starts on like the trailer park, and it focuses on, I don't know why, but it focuses on the dog and the cats and the pets before it even gets to humans. You see the alarm, like the beginnings, unless it was just like, oh, well, we started.
Oh, that's awesome.
But this shot with the dog.
The dog is great.
He is great. So
these are wonderful establishing shots.
Oh, they are.
Mm-hmm. It really does give you a feel for the
I think
for
it's
the
interesting,
place, for the
exactly, how it starts and how it introduces essentially the world of our hero. He's the last one we see. We see everyone else first.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that... Calabasas.
Yeah,
I was going to say,
does look like
I'm not sure where they shot this. It seems like
canyon
it's
country.
Somewhere north, though.
Yeah. And I like the tiki mask back there.
Mm-hmm.
It's the idyllic trailer park. Ah, yes. I mean, yeah.
They actually make the trailer park look
by the
very
way,
exciting.
Little,
well, that's what I was saying. It's idyllic.
Yeah.
I got to tell you this because from watching the things, but side little star sighting,
yes.
That little kid in the red shirt back there.
That was Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton.
Yes.
Was that Will Wheaton?
That was Will Wheaton. And you can pick him out real fast in a scene later, but they actually ended up cutting most of his scenes. He is credited, though.
Is this pre-Stand By Me?
I think so.
Okay. All right.
I think so.
Makes sense. So he was just starting out.
Well, yeah, I can't imagine that he'd get like an itty bitty role in something like this after doing Stand By Me.
Yeah,
not right after.
Yeah, I just don't remember the chronology. There's Barbara Boston, who was Mrs. Stephen Bochco.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, that's why she. Well, I mean, that's why she. I mean, she was good, but she was on Hill Street Blues because she was married to the producer.
That helps. I wonder if there's some producer somewhere I could marry.
So, well, there you go.
Convenient.
But here she got this job clearly without him, and she was fine. You know, it's here it's. We have Lewis bringing us, well, eventually. Like keeps on
the sound of the walk-by assassin,
right?
That's
the
right.
The dark gun assassin.
And now we're introduced to our hero. He's the last one we see.
That is interesting.
And the newest piece of equipment in the entire trailer park.
This is my thing, is like, how many trailer parks would have a video game that, and where did it come from? Who paid for it?
Well, that's the point.
Right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's mysterious
off. It's supposed to be, it's supposed to be anomalous.
Well,
I think
you know, this is in the day when they were putting, basically, we call it, video games, arcade games everywhere.
True. But, looking at these graphics, there weren't a lot of games that were that sophisticated. You know what this reminds me of, actually, it's a little more filled out, but do you remember that Star Wars X-Wing fighter video game.
Oh, yeah.
Where you fly down the trench and it was all like lines and... I loved that game.
I think that
when that was out.
I think it's called Raster Graphics. Well, actually, later on in the film, they have graphics on when they're doing like tracing stuff in that are Raster Graphics also that were in the Star Wars game. I love the Star Wars game. That was because we hadn't seen anything like that.
Exactly.
Now it's just like, we have 3D games. What's the big deal? But for the time, it was really cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing the Death Star trench run,
you know.
I mean, clearly that's CG. That's not the actual video screen.
Right.
Missile Command was never that exciting. Missile Command was cool.
These are very impatient young people.
I don't like these young people, except for Catherine Mary Stewart,
who's adorable.
She's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. That was very wordy.
Oh, yes. Well, he got it out. He's Mr. Exposition there.
Yeah.
But, he's cutting down on being a local. But it's Catherine Mary Stewart, dude. You got to go.
Right?
So now, of course, we now have to make the comparisons to Star Wars. Of course, this is like Uncle Owen saying, come on, Luke.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, go waste time with your friends when your chores are done.
Exactly. It's interesting. In some places, it hits the same notes. In a way, I don't want to say intentionally, but it's like they were following the template by then. Well, this is how the hero's story goes, which is, in a way, it's fine in its own way.
Right.
It's interesting. At some point, he goes does something. I think it's right after this. Like he should be looking at double suns.
Yeah. The whole like looking off into the future. Sort of, sunset on the outskirts of nowhere.
Right. This way
we find our hero, waiting to start his adventure.
Right. Actually, in Star Wars, because there was the beginning that was cut out. The part that was cut out where he actually is in Tashi Station with his friends.
That's right. With Biggs and some other people.
Biggs
and the other guy. Yeah. And they kind of similar to this.
They cut that out of the script, or they actually shot it?
No, they shot it. Cut out.
They did.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
you
can find some outtakes from that, and it's parts of it actually really work, and parts of it really don't, and I can see why it got cut out.
Oh, really?
It just really, it's sort of like, and they were probably we're not going to go back and reshoot this.
Right,
yeah.
It's extra characters and extra, kind of setup that just wasn't really needed. Yeah, it didn't pay off. Good way to put it.
Yeah, I think this is the double sun moment. Looking off in the distance. I don't know what you want to call it. The I wish I could go there moment. I can't remember the Joseph Campbell term.
Yeah.
Oh, he's got the window open, of course.
Right. It's sort of like the...
Well,
he feels like he's bigger than the place he is, and he's looking off into some potential place he could be doing great things.
But they almost do it because they have the hanging planets, and he's got three planets there, not two suns.
Yeah, with the wind. Which, by the way, where was the wind motivated for? I guess, the thing is flapping on the window. That's
the
good.
Window.
Okay.
See, there's
just making sure.
There's the Saturn. He's going to see Saturn soon. So,
so that'll pay off.
Star Wars had been out now for 6-7 years, and of course Empire had been out. Actually, Jedi had been out also, so we were all very familiar with the whole Star Wars lore. It's not that it couldn't be, reinvented, which I'm sure the idea was to reinvent it here, which is fine.
And this too ties it into a place that we all are familiar with, or at least that is much more familiar than some strange, supposed galaxy far, far away.
A little more relatable.
Right. I can see why they would make this thinking, this will draw in a lot more people, because some people just can't watch a show that starts off someplace they've never seen or heard of or imagined.
Yeah, I'd never watch a movie that took place in another galaxy.
No,
and it has to happen now.
Yeah,
a long time ago. Forget it.
No, seriously.
Or in the future.
Either way. I take your sarcasm, but
no. This is an interesting point.
I know
you make.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
Who really can't expand their mind to that point.
Really?
They really
actually
have trouble watching fantasy things that are outside of certain parameters of a norm.
Yeah, I actually have friends who can't do that either. They can't watch fantasy films.
Mm-hmm.
Really, of any. They just want real. They want something that's
relatable.
Right. I don't understand it myself, but whatever.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, have you ever found with those people that they don't like Star Wars? Because I, you know, I'm trying to think of anyone I know who don't. But maybe I'm just friends with.
Yeah, I do know people who don't like Star Wars.
Yeah.
Believe it or
not. I know people who don't like Star Wars, but for that,
I find
for
more
although
reason
I don't trust
for the
them.
Reason that you
yes.
were
strange
for the reason that you were saying, Duncan, that they can't relate to something that's just imaginary, that imaginary circumstance.
Honestly, I've met more people who are not to stereotype, but people who
but
basically yeah. yes. Many people who are old enough to have been adults or at least teenagers prior to the Star Wars films coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I find many of those people, because, you know, before that, there wasn't as
true.
Much of that
but
really
I actually
extreme
know people,
fantasy
I know,
stuff.
I know people
know?
My age who can't relate to Star Wars.
Well, sure, me too. I'm just saying more often.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
but,
yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know what it is. Those people also, you know, are not into video games or any particular thing where you are using your imagination to entertain yourself. You know, they're more interested in concrete stuff.
That's
an interesting study.
That is interesting.
And I actually... My father and I used to go to watch the Star Trek TV show, and it actually, one of the things that was amazing about that experience to me was that my dad was able to enjoy it, because most of the adults that I knew when I was young couldn't. They couldn't, they didn't, which is probably why the series failed.
Right, I can see that. It wouldn't have had a market.
Yeah, and actually it only gained its market essentially
after it was gone.
5 or 10 years, about 5 years later, when people who were young enough were kind of keeping on watching it, and they kind of grew from there.
Yeah.
I can see that.
It's interesting.
I say the series failed. I guess that's not really fair to say.
Right.
I mean, they got three seasons?
They did get three seasons. Well, yeah, 3 seasons. But they got Freddy Freiberger in the 3rd season, which so...
So there you have it.
Freddy Freiberger, who killed Space 1999 in its 2nd season also.
Mm.
By the way, I love that moment they just had, because it's... You can't, like, sci-fi often suffers from not having enough human interaction, from not having enough, like, depth of characters where you see them actually, you know, the characters interacting and you kind of get behind their eyes and you want to be one of them, or you at least, you know, can relate to the characters. Sometimes it gets to be so much eye candy with the, in terms of technology and CGI and,
yeah,
explosions or whatever, but I love little moments like that where they're having a little romantic moment that could happen to anybody. It's just, I like that. Adds a good depth to it.
Right. Now, this whole thing where he starts scoring, you know, getting the high score, this is where, at least, is one of the few instances, not too many in this film, where the credulity is kind of a little stretched.
Yes.
Yeah,
I
it's
concur.
Like, really? These people are really that? Of course, it does sort of, or... I suppose, speak to how slow life is in their environment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I can buy that. Absolutely,
yeah.
I can buy that.
Yeah, I can't think of, like,
I just don't like that many
varied ages and different people that could be that excited about it. Unless the thing it had been there for years and years and years, and they were more excited for Alex doing this.
I could see that,
than
but,
for the game itself.
Yeah, and I think my problem is not so much that they're excited, it's that how it's kind of executed, that they're excited about the game and exactly not about him. See, he's looking at the game.
Right.
I don't know. And it goes back to the point that you were making, is that, and this is, what, 84, I doubt any of these people had touched a video game, much less could relate to, oh, this is, you know, worth your time.
Right.
We should be
right.
doing other things, like
right.
playing cards or
right.
anything, reading a book.
Mm-hmm.
Video games are a waste of time.
Now, who knows what they might have shot and didn't put in here. I mean, they could have shown someone being critical of the kids spending so much time on the
right.
the game or something.
Or on the other side, other people playing it, for instance. The only people... Oh, yeah, the shooting star.
That's later. Yeah, I came on watching.
Or is that later?
It's,
okay.
It's after. Yeah.
But, you know, what's weird is that, I mean, if everybody played it, or at least a lot of people,
right.
and they could relate to playing it, that would have made more sense.
Or if they had just shown a couple of people around it, even just sitting
sure.
near it at the beginning.
Showing that they enjoy watching it,
or at least
hang out there in that
located.
Area or
right,
something.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
they
were a little bit more relatable. You know, Lance, the actor Lance playing Alex in this, I have to say, I like his performance, and I expected to see him a lot more after this film, and didn't. I mean, he worked. He was a working actor, and I don't know if I don't know where he is now. If he's, I mean, I'm sure he's still around. He's still young enough.
Right.
But I really expected to see more of him after this.
Yeah.
We saw her in a few other things. She is just lovely. But I like his performance. And that, like, when he was doing the game right there, I thought, he's got great intensity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he also has this ability to, you know, to be kind of gangly, dorky. Yeah, there he is right there doing it.
Right.
Right.
But these two actors, I liked this movie a lot when I saw it. I mean, I was excited about it. So yeah, I really did expect to see more of them. I liked their performances.
Well, that did surprise me, too, yeah, watching it again recently, is what happened to these people.
Well, it's like, but it's like Zach Galligan from Gremlins, who was really good in Gremlins. And, like, all he did was Gremlins 2, and then really nothing much else. What happened? He just went away. I mean, he was really good. You know, he's really good. Now he's not. excuse me. He's not Lance Guest material, but you know, he was a little on the nerdier side, which I kind of, you know, which I thought was good.
But there's
and
certainly
different.
A market for that.
And who knows what happened to him. And Catherine Mary Stewart did actually a number of, you know, lower budget indie films, well, I don't want to call it indie films, but the lower budget sci-fi stuff like Night of the Comet. She had a bunch of stuff in the early 80s.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, Night of the Comet's awesome. I don't know what happened to her. I guess, you know, different careers are different. And they kind of went.
Yeah, I guess, representation.
He did some
St.
Elsewhere, and he did some TV spots, and he did a couple of other movies, including, I think, one of the horror movies. I'm trying to think of what it was. You know, recognizable, like a Halloween or something. Right.
By the way, was that a real cereal, that Brand Chex thing?
Chex?
I kind of wondered.
C-H-E-X?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, it was just a certain type of Chex. Okay, duh. Yeah, so that was total product placement. I love it. I wonder how much money they paid.
Admiral Refrigerator.
Yep, Admiral Refrigerator. There you go. And caloric oven.
Oh, nice.
Stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Equipment, whatever. You know what I find interesting is if they're trying to hit the sort of demographic that of kids that would have seen the Star Wars films and been into those, this lead character... is I remember seeing him more as an adult when I first saw this.
You think
I remember
a little
old
grown up?
Like he doesn't necessarily strike me as 18 even now looking at that. He looks a little older, which he probably is. But
He was 24
yeah.
this time.
Oh, well, and yeah, and see
he's real
when
tall.
I was in 84, if I saw this even like in 84 I was 8 years old. So in 86, you know, still only 10, he would have looked more like an adult. Yeah, here's your shooting star coming up.
Here's your shooting star coming up. Yeah, there it is.
Centauri arriving, theoretically.
By the way, love him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the guy. Well, he delivers.
He definitely delivers the good.
Always has.
Robert Preston?
Yeah. And apparently he was, you know, channeling the Music Man when he did this.
That
flim-flam kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. Slightly,
I can see this being real fun for him, like doing this. Yeah. I mean, like he's had his career; he's a freaking legend, and this is just like kind of fun.
Wow,
we're looking at a picture of Catherine Mary Stewart.
Is that a recent
photo? Now?
She is amazing looking.
Yep.
Still,
and she is. She's 52 now.
She's gorgeous.
Good for her,
and Canadian.
I wonder if she wants her citizenship.
Is she taken, Serge? We'll call her up for you.
Thank you,
Catherine Mary Stewart. If you're listening to this,
yeah.
Sarah's Del Pierre.
All right. Yeah, but what if she wants her citizenship? Serge can't give her that. He can't deliver that.
Thanks.
But I can.
You just wrecked it.
I'm blocking you, man.
Serious.
Yeah, good luck.
Now, by the way, I love this car. It was the coolest thing back then. And this was like a little bit before Back to the Future.
Was it before Back to the Future?
Yeah, because the first Back to the Future came out in like 86.
With the gull wings?
Something like that. Or 87. Well, no, wait. No, 85. 85. So it's all based in 85. So it came out like
right
a year
before.
After. Yeah.
This is like the Back to the Future station wagon.
Basically, right? It's like a DeLorean with a, you know, giant, you know, area.
Yeah, I remember when the DeLoreans came out. They were cool cars, of course. You know, it was the whole thing. It's like no one was buying them, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, the doors, you know, of course, suggest wings.
Awesome.
Why didn't those catch on? I just want to know.
Why this shot? The over the shoulders. I mean, it's just an odd shot.
Oh, because it's from the back seat.
No. I mean, yes.
Which took me a while to figure out. But what do you mean? But also, Why this shot here?
No, why is he looking over his shoulder? It's just an odd shot. My thought is
because
that
it's from
just
his point of view.
It's a way to show it's the high-tech.
Yeah.
No, but it's a point of view so that you know that he was from, he's looking from the back seat up towards him.
No, I get that. Yeah, I just wondered why they did it that way.
So he'd be in the back seat so he could shake hands with Beta.
Oh, Beta. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Not a clone.
And then also, I think it's because there's probably a seal between the front seat and the back seat, so he could be like, you know, he can breathe.
That's the impression I got.
I love how he talks. He talks about himself in the third person.
Love it. It's quite amusing.
Okay, that was a little gaggy.
A little stick.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a little sticky. But he's great in this.
Yeah.
He's totally doing the Music Man.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I almost expect him to break into song any second.
I think
This was his last feature.
Really?
Yeah, it was his last. He did two other feature-length pieces, but they were cable. I think they were cable.
He did Finnegan Begin Again, which I vaguely remember.
That was a TV movie, right?
Yeah, and Outrage, which was a TV movie also. Yeah, this was his last feature film.
No kidding.
Yeah.
He really brings the goods. I mean, I think he just makes this movie.
Yeah, I think this movie wouldn't have been as well balanced without him doing this character like this.
Yeah. Anchor.
Yeah. You got a lot of different types of elements here, and most of it is pretty serious. Some of it's a little cheesy, and he's just sort of adds that semi-comedic kind of, bridging the gap kind of character. Again, I can't think of the terms right now, but...
Rylos.
He really, puts it together.
And that looks so natural.
Right?
That effect is so natural.
Wow, look at that CG. Actually, that CG's almost there.
That is almost there. It's true.
That
they
is almost
need,
there.
They need some more texture mapping.
Well, yeah.
Well,
I love it that they...
Basically, yes.
And I love the green melon flames behind them.
I like how the practical car had such simple lines that it was easy for them to duplicate.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure was by design.
Right. Right.
Excuse me while I whip this off.
Yeah.
That was actually a nice CG reflection they put in the glass.
Oh. You don't think that he's...
Now we know what kind of game it is.
Zoinks.
Because before it's like, well, where's this human being coming from that's coming to get him from the outer reaches of space? The fact that he's an alien makes a lot more sense. It's just fun.
I think it's interesting that...
This is a weird moment that he's just not doing anything.
Well, I think this is part of the watch what you're experiencing moment. It's like Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Oh, yeah,
watching
the
Enterprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can
see
that.
That's an interesting comparison.
Yeah.
Which I didn't mind in Star Trek, and here it kind of works. I mean, you're being exposed. Essentially, they were just trying to write the visual.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want the vocabulary, I guess. You know, this is their hyperspace type of thing.
Oh, that was nicely put. Yeah.
This is how you see the stars. Though I got to say, I mean, for Star Wars, having done stars the way they did, these stars are not all that good.
No.
I mean, I know this was all CG, and so this was a different thing. But it's like Star Wars set the template, and you got to go from there.
Well, now...
I mean, they set the bar. So they set the bar. It's like...
Yeah.
And Star Wars is 77.
And Star Wars, much less the Empire. The planets were paintings.
Right. But here the decision was made, and if you watch the making of thing they talk about, the decision was made to go CG, strictly CG. That was unilaterally, because they could have gone to paintings, they could have gone to models,
right.
And they decided we're doing CG for whatever reasons they did. Which, okay.
Well, I can see, though, this doesn't really have, apart from Robert Preston, doesn't have any major stars in it, really.
No.
So they would have to have some kind of gimmick if they expected it to do well in the large field of
CG as a gimmick.
I'm pretty sure if I were putting this movie out at the time, I wouldn't make the decision to go with CG, which would have been more expensive then, unless I had, you know, an idea that I'd get something out of it.
Well,
and
I
that seems
it, yeah,
like the
you'd
only
have to
real
capitalize
reason.
On it.
Yeah.
It
This actually had like only mediocre success at the box office, though. I looked that up before.
What are the numbers on it? Do we know?
think it was like 24 or 26 million in 84, something like that.
Hmm.
I mean, it wasn't horrible, but...
According to IMDb, the budget was an estimated $15 million. Opening weekend was $6 million.
Oh, wow, I totally remember that wrong.
$6 million and 1,287 screens for a gross in the U.S. of $28,773,290.
Oh, not a big earner at all.
Not huge. Not Star Wars.
No.
But
then, I mean, it wasn't like it was a flop, but it wasn't, wasn't like busting up the box office either.
I think women, more women should wear their hair that way, by the way.
Definitely. Love the bald look.
That's a good look.
The bald with wings. Yeah. Yeah. Dead sexy.
And you see, here we get if you listen to the music cue, you get kind of a real, like, pseudo-Star Wars feel.
Yeah, that is like true. Yeah. Like a sort of March of the Droids kind of thing.
Exactly. Exactly. He doesn't know what's going on, and she basically puts him in there, mm-hmm. and he's...
This hallway looks very Star Wars, by the way.
But, the music does that, and then you have the cheesy sound effects. I'm like, mm-hmm. it's like they...
Yeah, the sound
it's
effects...
Like, it's like they almost had it. They were almost there.
Yeah.
You know, if it had the budget... You know, this reminds me of Galaxy Quest for some reason, this look. Of course,
definitely.
The other way around. Galaxy Quest would remind me of this.
I'm still trying to figure out what the visor thingy is for. It just kind of looks funny.
The card game.
Right, totally looks like a dealer.
I think it's a data readout thing. You flip it down, and then you actually.
Oh,
have your
that would make sense because they have some other things like that.
The aliens actually have the thing where it flips in front of the
eye. Yeah, that one dude does.
And it was like in 84 they had that. Wow.
Yeah, that was a neat addition. Like there are a lot of little fun things that they add in here, but you pointed out, like some of the sound effects fall short, and
just a little bit.
Just little things.
The set design actually is really good. I agree.
Is it possible they were trying to? Go with, video game sounds.
That is possible.
Yeah, but
I don't know why they would do that.
I would say nice. No, just kidding.
Look how pasty that kid is. He's like a vampire child.
Right?
He's got too much makeup.
Product placement for Playboy, you think?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, somebody paid money for that to be there.
I think they just got permission to use it.
Yeah, I don't think product placement was something that was big at this
time. No, but I mean, I'm thinking that the filmmakers might have had to. I don't know.
They'd have to get permission. You have to get clearance on those covers.
Right. I mean, like, either they paid a licensing fee or...
84. The law's the law. Becomes
the law.
No. They would have written to them and say, "We just want clearance on four or five issues that we can show the covers of." Okay, use these, and these. That's fine.
By the way, there's the popular slogan of the day too, "Save the whales." This was I think this was the same year that Star Trek IV came out, wasn't it? Pretty close.
84.
I think it was early 80s.
I have tried to erase that movie from my memory.
Oh come on! It wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad until it got to the save the whales thing. This was pretty gruesome.
Really cool. I remember being a little freaked out by this when I was a kid.
I can imagine.
But then thinking, oh, that's cool, because I like the lights under the skin. That's pretty neat.
What age were you when you saw this?
I had to be maybe like, it came out when I was 8, so I probably saw it maybe in the next year, so somewhere between 8 and 10 years old.
Okay, I can see that being, because I was already my...
Yeah, some of this stuff was creepy, especially the part coming up where they melt the guy's brain
and
strap to a chair.
Look at that graphic in the back. That's like Star Wars.
It is.
It's very, very Star Wars.
That's very Death Star clearing the moon of Yavin to come around to the moon.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Look at these stations.
But it's the
Star Trek stations and Star Wars.
But it's the kind of graphics that actually hold up somewhat to the test of time, because that graphic I can still buy.
Sure.
And that's the interesting
Because it could be just a functional graphic. It doesn't have to be.
Because even the Star Wars graphics, the way they use them, they still hold up somehow. They did that, and it just kind of transcends.
Yeah,
this doesn't make sense to me.
What doesn't?
Why these ships going by this control center?
Well, this is the staging area
everything's crammed together.
Yeah, they're
so small.
It's being moved on conveyor. Well, see, there's the hangar. They would go from the briefing into the hangar.
I
don't know. It makes sense to me. By the way, one element that I do like a lot that, when I thought about it, didn't make sense in Star Trek is the difference in language.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with Star Wars. There are different people speaking different languages. Somehow everyone seems to understand each other. And in Star Trek, they just all speak English. Here, they actually justify it with an actual device. You know what it is. You know what it does. That's cool to me. Like, I love seeing little technology things like that. And that's something that's different than how Star Wars or Star Trek handled it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there are explanations in, you know, extended things, but you never see it in a film or in a show.
Well, what was the Australian TV series Farscape? In Farscape, they have...
That was Australian?
Yeah, they shot in Australia.
I didn't know that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hmm. They shoot microbes into people's, you know, interpreter microbes or something.
Right. You know, I have to take that back. I actually do remember a Star Trek original series episode where they had a giant handheld thing that they used to talk to the Gorn with.
Yeah, you've got the Universal Translator.
There's Universal Translator.
Right.
That was Journey to Babel.
Right, but how often do they actually show that? I don't think they have it.
They had it
movie.
Built into the ship.
I don't think it's anywhere in the movies.
Yeah. I think it's kind of...
They reference it in Star Trek number 6, because they have to reply directly in Klingon.
Look at these great masks.
Right. Yeah, they are really great.
Now, the thing that I find very interesting is that he's been, you know, he scored on the game. Robert Preston, Centauri, talks him into... Yeah, get in the car, takes him there, doesn't tell him anything that's going on, and literally brings him here, and the guy has no idea. It's like he's been recruited against his will.
Yeah.
Which is like, what the hell?
And he's just a kid. I mean, he has no context for big,
see,
huge,
now like,
you know, things like this. Because, you know, yeah, they recruit kids that age to the military, but they train them a whole lot before they kick them out into the field.
Well, that's what they were doing, though, on the game.
They condition them.
Well, they weren't doing... No, they were testing.
Of.
They were trying to find
exactly
people with
boot
talent.
Camp. Yeah, it's not exactly boot camp. Really, it was just looking for talent of... You know what I find interesting? Notice that they're all paired for the same species. If you notice, it's like pilot and navigator front to back in the seating arrangement here.
Yeah.
Not only is his gone, but Grig, who we're about to meet, there's no other of his species there to be the pilot or to be the gunner. Why? See, they're all lined up in a row. It's the same species, yeah.
Front and back.
Maybe that was, you know what? Maybe that was a subplot that they took out.
I hope so. I mean, that's kind of a big deal. You'd think Grig would say something about it at least, or maybe like
Robert.
I don't know.
He's just
walking by.
Death,
yeah.
It's like
the consummate. You know,
that's what it,
sham,
okay, but that's what it
sham
is.
Man.
Basically, he did that. So he said now he wants his money. Blend basically, in. He got his money for delivering the pilot.
Right. But what's interesting is he's working kind of under the table with this person to get the money to really do the deal.
Right. Now that's Dan O'Hurley. Which is pretty amazing.
And he does a great job with this character, too. I love the character
tics. He was not young here, either.
Who is he?
Dan O'Hurley. He's an old actor. He was in Twin Peaks. He played Andrew Packard.
Oh, my God.
What else?
Wow. And that looks like a pretty complicated mask.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing they were able to keep it intact like that, where he can move his head, you know, back and forth.
And you get a little buckling in the back of the neck, but that's a nice...
But
it
looks organic.
It's a nice piece.
Yeah, he'd been acting since the 40s.
Wow.
He did movies and he did lots of TV.
I wonder if this was unique in his experience.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's the... this is like the most famous piece of crap sci-fi equipment that they're standing in front of.
Oh, yeah.
See that?
The flashy
it's
light
so
things.
Many, the flashy light thing.
But you know what? It
Love
works.
It. Love it. Yeah, it works.
Totally works.
It works. There's got to be subplot stuff with Grig, though, because he's clearly has like a higher degree of aptitude with gadgetry and with the technical side of how the Gunstars work, because he's personally working on this prototype Gunstar with a new weapons system and stuff. I'm just real curious to know the backstory. Where's the other one of his species, and why wasn't he in the briefing? I mean, he should have been over there in the briefing. What was he doing, you know?
See, this is what, I mean, I guess, I don't know.
This is very, very much like a Planet of the Apes mask in its color and in the sort of look of it.
Well, it looks like a really, really good mask on
it's
here.
Nice
it's
mask.
Really,
yeah,
it's
beautiful.
Really...
Nice foam. I'm sure.
And again, we have the wind blowing through.
Oh, okay. So the wind relates to the wind. Okay.
And by the way, this is very Star Wars, the whole like floating hologram giant head thing. It's like the Emperor in Empire Strikes Back.
Now, I got to say, okay.
Oh, great giant
now,
head.
Now, right. Now we meet like basically the 35-minute mark, the enemy, you know, the antagonist, which usually you meet at the beginning of a film where you see. And
that's a good point.
But that's fine. It's fine. I just feel that for an antagonist, this guy, for a bad guy, though he seems like he's going to be a bad guy later, doesn't become enough of a bad guy, so to speak.
Right.
All the way up to the end. I mean, at the end, they just basically, they take him away and he escapes. Right. And
I'm more scared of the guys that are actually operating the battleship than I am of this dude who...
Absolutely.
You know, they never make any illusion except for this scene about the fact that he's just some dummy who's a pawn.
Right. And in that sense, you know, he's no Darth Vader.
No, exactly.
And he's no... I mean, he claims he wants to be emperor, but he's no emperor either.
I kind of wish that he had been that, because when he escaped, I'm just like, oh, whatever.
Exactly.
Whereas if he had been really effectively put forward as a villain and really effectively built up, I would have been like, oh, no, he escaped. What's going to happen now?
You know? Awesome.
Yeah, see, this was really freaky when I was 10 years old.
Now that, okay.
Just FYI.
Now, this was freaky. This was definitely his Darth Vader moment.
Right. This is the choking the dude across the table moment for him as a villain.
Only... Did the dude die across the table?
No, he let him go.
He let him go. But,
it's his show of force. It's his, here's what I can do to you kind of thing.
Right. And this is where, you know, basically he's saying, I will invade. Yeah, structurally, this film is interesting because it does do some things that other films don't. I mean, there's the whole thing of, what's Lance Guest's character's name?
Alex.
Alex, you know, Alex Rogan. Alex basically gets kidnapped. I mean, let's face it. He does get kidnapped.
It's only a shade off.
Come on. I mean, he's basically, you know.
Yeah, he's Shanghai.
That's a good way to say it.
But now, here, the thing is that, ironically, him not wanting to do it and him following the rules is what saves them all. Because they leave now, and because at the base...
Remember,
they've been working, and there's the traitor at the base that basically everyone gets
killed. Same person, by the way, that is giving the money to Centauri.
Oh, is it?
You'll see. Yeah, same person.
Okay.
Very distinctive. And by the way, I love the idea that they put forward here, that there is essentially this gigantic force field that's so large that it encompasses... a whole bunch of star systems, including Earth, which is so far flung from these other ones that we are not even aware of them.
These costumes.
Those costumes remind me of the Fifth Element.
They do. You're right.
Yeah. I can see that.
They do. And this was... When was Fifth Element? That was the 90s.
Now, this is very Star Wars-y, too.
It's Star Wars, but I like the set. I do, and it's not too cheesy. It's got a sense of itself. Like, I can see how this race would... do things for themselves this way.
Yeah. Do you know what the colors remind me of? Is do you remember that movie Black Hole that was a Disney movie?
There's his visor.
Yeah, I love that.
Oh, yeah, the Black Hole.
Yeah,
I love the Black Hole.
Yeah, I did too. We should do that sometime. That's fun.
The Black Hole was wonderful. It was so funny.
No.
It was great, man.
Oh.
And by the way, the spinning claw thing on that robot really freaked me out when I was a kid too. You remember that at the end where he kills a guy?
Okay, you know what? It's got Event Mimieux, so it's got Event Mimieux, right?
Came out right around the same. What was that term?
I think it's got Event Mimieux. An actress, Event Mimieux.
Oh, that's a person.
Event Mimieux.
I don't know.
I think she's in it. If she's in it, then I can say yes.
A sinister chuckle.
Like
this is really good makeup.
Yeah,
it really is. And by the way,
look at that.
It's kind of fun to like think about, like, this is just how my mind works. You look at all the drones, they're very shapeless, right? They look like sort of like larvae in a way, barely formed, and they do very basic things and barely even move. Whereas these guys who are in command clearly don't look like them. They look more like features like humans have. It's almost like maybe the guys in command, are the more developed versions of these other ones, or who knows?
Maybe.
Like, there's a whole like interesting symbiosis sort of thing that they didn't really try to develop, but
These creatures,
in my mind, seem cool.
As I mean, they're very complicated makeup pieces, but they're not terribly justifiable. Like,
how so?
The wrinkling doesn't seem to make sense. You know, I mean, it's not. It's sort of wrinkling for wrinkling's sake, and doesn't seem very.
Maybe they just don't use enough conditioner.
Well, it's interesting.
Clearly, they don't moisturize.
If you look at them, they almost look like they're made of wood. They've got sort of striations that go diagonally down the face. There's an asymmetry to them.
Well, have you visited their planet? See, those are the
Last time I was on Codan, they didn't look like
that. That's the raster graphics I was talking about there.
Right,
The Duncan. That was like the
Star. Oh yeah, for sure. And it does stand up because it's very basic. It makes you think militaristic functionality. You know, nothing, no frills, basically.
This can't be good.
Yeah, I know, right.
It's a good thing he told them to do that, because otherwise they would have just let him hit them.
Yeah, I know, right? I love it that they just sort of, like, fire randomly in these, you know, this is, like, before the day and age when cruise missiles were common knowledge, if they were even invented yet.
Now, who is this guy?
Same person that was giving him
the
money.
Oh, the visor guy.
Mm-hmm. Or lady. I can't tell what gender that person is.
You know, that's right. It was...
they have a high-pitched voice.
I love the fact that they use that giant, giant piece of plastique.
Yeah.
You wouldn't use, like, a small vial of an explosive something high-tech.
I mean, it's funny. I take your meaning. And it does make a kind of a small explosion for the size.
But here's my problem is that also, that's a single point of failure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no redundancy in the right.
You have to be inside the place to do that. So...
Well,
I'm sure there are plenty of non-redundant systems like that if you're, you know, have them set up in a place where you don't expect people to be.
I guess. I don't know. But I can understand. It was clever on his part to launch the attack and then have a spy.
The spy, by the way, had to die in that explosion, don't you think?
That's what I was wondering is, like, how did he escape? Now, the interesting thing is that how did he find out that the starfighter escaped that quickly?
Because
they
did the deal with Centauri. They would have known that he left. Nothing they could do about it. You know?
Wait, who did the deal with Centauri?
The same person who sabotaged the
console
did the deal. So they were keenly aware that a starfighter left because Centauri had to give them the money back and before he left with them, right?
Ah.
Okay, I can buy that. It doesn't really make sense, though, that he would bother to tell him that someone left with a non-pilot.
Well, but the ship doesn't work with just a pilot. You have to have a pilot and a gunner, and the gunner.
That's what I'm saying. Why would it get reported that this guy left? Nah,
It was just that person had a personal deal with Centauri about bringing the dude there at all. So money had to go back from Centauri to that person who had given him the money, and they're the same one who sabotaged and that. Tipped the Codans off. They're the spy.
Right.
Right. So you're suggesting that the spy tipped off the Codans that someone left.
Right.
Yeah, that's what they just received a transmission about. The reason the spy knows was to destroy the starfighters. That's why they blew up the base in the first place. Maybe I'm misunderstanding what you're saying.
Yeah, maybe.
Ooh, the spy did likely inform them that the starfighter went back there, and that's why they send the assassin to kill Alex on Earth.
It wasn't a starfighter. He isn't a starfighter.
Yeah, he is. In their book, he is. He's the only one that's still alive that could theoretically get in that ship and operate the guns.
All
right. Right. It's not the machine, it's the man.
It's the fighter, by the way. Starfighter, star navigator, starfighter. Mm. You have to have a fighter for the ship to matter. So... the fact that he was there at all suggests that he has the skill.
So maybe this film should be called The Star Navigator?
Only if it was about Grig.
The Last Star Navigator. And it should be about Grig.
He wouldn't go anywhere without Grig.
because there are no more. It could have been The Last Starfighter and Last Navigator.
Or it could have been The Last Star Pilot.
Star Navigator.
Or if they just called it Strange Sexual Urges, as she just said, they would have sold a lot more popcorn.
Yeah, certainly would have grossed more than $26 million.
Okay, that was funny. That was a funny.
I do like this part, though, with the whole beta unit. Like, that's a very clever thing that they, like, way of treating it and everything. Mm-hmm. Create some drama, turn it around. That's fun.
What the?
You know who Lance Guest looks like? He looks like Jeff East. You know who Jeff East is?
No.
Jeff East played Superman as a teenager in the Superman movie.
Oh, wow! How do you know that name? That's some random trivia.
Because he was also he played Huckleberry Finn in the Tom Sawyer movie that was like in 1976 with Jodie Foster and Johnny Whitaker.
I feel like I saw that.
And then he played Huckleberry Finn in the sequel, well, the Huckleberry Finn movie, which I've never seen. And then he did Superman. But then basically what they did is they redubbed his voice. Chris Reeve redubbed his entire voice. All you get is Jeff East's performance. But they look practically exactly the same.
Yeah, you're right. They do have a very, very similar look.
And then I don't know what happened to Jeff East.
These two guys look alike. I wonder how they found the doppelganger.
I don't know.
They should like hook up with Armie Hammer.
I enjoy though how they have this shining straight on him from here, which totally justifies the different light levels on each of them when they shoot it. See,
well, but it also it hides the matte line.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it makes it easy to separate the two and not make it seem out of place. Yeah, it's good stuff. The human guy right here before he turns into the alien assassin looks like my landlord.
He
looks like your landlord right now?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not the same guy.
A little more acne scarring, but yeah, same. Looks very similar.
Now, someone can please explain to me what the hell is happening right here?
It's a built-in...
So the game knows that he's an alien and basically reverts him?
Yeah, it knows that he's an alien, yes. Exactly. It's a security system.
Yeah, I like that.
In that case, I think the game should do much more.
Yeah, if it can do this...
Why not kill him?
Exactly.
Thank you. Or provide, you know, instructional, right. or it'd be like a good email or chat client or some sort.
Well, you'd think, too...
You should be able to hack it and, you know, talk to the home planet.
Yeah. You'd think, too, that if it has a safeguard system like that, that it would also at the same time contact or send a signal to Centauri. FYI, a Zurian freaking assassin was close enough to the machine to activate the security system.
Thank you.
Why is it so funny when little kids swear?
That's what
it
they
is, but why?
That's why they have them. That's why they have them swear and read Playboys because it's funny.
Yeah. He's like, it's going nuts again. That's weird.
Yeah, apparently the game can only pull one face off of an alien before it starts to malfunction.
Yeah, apparently.
And starts rocking back and forth.
You know, actually,
like R2-D2.
That's what it did when it was sending a message to Centauri before about Alex doing well in the game.
Right.
It rocked Maybe back that's and forth. What it's doing right now, and it just happened that he's hitting the thing at the same time.
Oh. Could be.
So that would make sense. I hadn't thought about that.
Hey.
Uh-oh. What's going on? Uh-oh. Why would he climb up there? Why would you make that your...
Thank you.
Your choice
Thank
of
you.
Assault positions.
Thank you. That was lame. And then why do you only run, like, right around the corner? Now, the good thing he did is he picked up a piece of wood with a nail in it.
Yes.
But he doesn't...
A classic board
But he doesn't
nail.
Use it. Come on.
Well, it's because it's the guy's on top of him by the time he realizes where he is.
If you're going to put it, you know, it's like if you're gonna have a
board with a nail.
A board with a nail. You got to have the nail go up to something. You got to
pay off.
Smack somebody with it.
It doesn't get paid off.
It's
like,
true.
It's like Chekhov said, you know, have a gun and then you got to pay it off eventually. Well, he didn't say it quite like that, but the whole thing is you introduce a gun at the beginning of a play and then you're going to wait the whole play for someone to use the gun. But then if you don't...
You just want to see him. You want to see him whack that guy and have the board stick to his head.
I want the nail to go into his eye.
Whoa!
So you see, there's no payoff. He throws away the board. Well, the 2x4.
Yeah.
And you can't tell me in this whole trailer park there isn't somebody with a gun.
I like the I like the fact that the car is driving along with the door open.
Mm-hmm. I think Granny's got a shotgun.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying is, like, there's all this noise and things, you know, getting shot and blowing up and sparks. How come nobody shows up?
Oh, and there's another Star Wars moment.
Oh, yeah, totally. You're right.
Dismembered arm.
Oh, yes.
I got to say, I'm a little disappointed, too, when they did the cutaway, like, full shot of the guy shooting. Mm-hmm. He was, like, it was like he was a mannequin holding still, which clearly he was to have the arm effect work and all stuff. But it's just too bad they used those shots also for the cutaway shooting.
Get it? Bit your asteroids.
An interstellar hit beast.
He's not one a hit word. Man.
He's got a band that's.
Now, what's cool about him is, of course, that he can still operate his arm now that it's been cut off, and he can still do the gig.
See, they have a lot of cool little elements in this.
Yeah,
I do enjoy all the little things that they have put in here.
It's like Beta doesn't know this already.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Wait, why did he burst into flames that time?
Because someone shot many times, which we didn't see shot.
Yeah, he shot him like with four or five but shots. We didn't see enough heat to cause combustion.
But we didn't see him squeezing off the shots. That's the whole thing.
That is an interesting point. So it might maybe like helps the rating or something. Keeps it less violent?
I just don't think they had the footage.
Oh, maybe not.
So they cut around it.
Yeah, because setting a creature on fire probably would affect the rating more than seeing a dude shoot.
Durr. Yeah.
My name's Duncan. I like to talk about film.
Yeah,
I do find it odd, though, that the Beta unit didn't put together that he was going to get shot at. Like, you'd think that he knows all this other stuff and he's very matter of fact about it, but that takes him by surprise for some reason.
I think it's
funnier, but you know,
I think that's a weakness in the script.
Yeah, just doesn't make a lot of sense. Oh, the green blood, very much like Vulcan blood. And by the way, the communicator looks an awful lot like a Star Trek implement of some kind. I mean, he could have just hit a button on the console.
Yeah, but
it's cooler to have
you gotta
a
make
device.
I like the carpeting that's on the back.
Yeah,
that's my favorite.
You like that? That's sound-soaked carpeting?
You know, it works.
Hey, at least the intercom works still. Oh, I can just push this down. Why didn't I do that earlier?
I bet Centauri was actually a cab driver, and that's why he had the glass shield, so he'd keep the passengers in back.
Maybe.
Could have.
Yeah. Well, they didn't show it, but there is a meter on the dash that's clicking away.
See? No doubt.
Credits.
He has to make money somehow.
Now, that is interesting. I didn't notice this before, but there's a door that opens in the further front of the car for the driver to get in and out, and then the other door is actually further back on the car. It's not straight across from him.
Right.
And I also didn't notice until watching it.
There are two doors?
No, but I mean, they're not straight next to each other
on the chassis.
Maybe not, but I did notice inside the cab, you see to his right, there's like a giant block just like blocking what would be the passenger seat right there.
Yeah, obviously designed by the same people who designed the Humvee.
Yes, no doubt. Because that does have that.
That's such a convenient and comfortable car to be in.
Very. Glad I haven't had to, you know, drive it in it anywhere that matters.
Okay, so. All right. We think he's dead.
Yes.
He thinks he's dead. But does Grig really think he's dead? Or are they scamming him? Are they just scamming? They're scamming Alex here.
Maybe, but Grig, as we get to know him better, doesn't seem like
he's very genuine.
The scamming kind of guy. Like, he seems very straightforward.
Okay, fine. But the thing is, he should know that Centauri would be regenerating.
Well, who's to say? How does he know what race Centauri really is? All he can see is the makeup, too.
Oh, okay.
And how do we know? There was not another member of that species in amongst the starfighters either. So maybe Centauri's species is even from a far-flung world someplace relative to there. They just happen to be higher tech than Earth, so they are included.
All right.
Don't know.
I'll give it to you.
Could be a lot.
All right. No, I'll give it to you. All right.
Thanks, man.
I'll give you that one, Fraser.
You're a gentleman and a scholar, sir.
I try.
I like this scene, too. It's a nice little add-on to sort of like, I don't know, add some more funny moments, but also some cool little sci-fi things.
Yeah, but does this add anything to moving the plot along or the characters?
No, which was my point. Like, I like it because it's fun. They could take this out and it really wouldn't matter.
Ugh. So bad.
Right.
So bad.
Yeah, that's bad. Apart from the end where he sees the other assassin land, this isn't. So see, that works.
It's a neat little trick. The Scourge of the Big Brother.
Right. Wait a minute. That's not a falling star.
See, that was fine until he does
this.
Yeah. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, that's a little much. They could have cut it off before that. They could have cut
I don't actually mind him grabbing the nose. It's the actually doing the head twist.
No, yeah, I know. Yeah.
I really like Grig.
Yeah.
And I like, you know, how Grig as a character and just how he's done. I think, really, just Grig is awesome.
Enemy Mine.
Mm-hmm. That was Lou Gossett.
Yeah, it does remind me of that, actually. Same.
Similar makeup.
Very similar.
And I liked Enemy Mine very much.
Hmm. You know, I don't think I've ever seen the whole movie.
I don't think I've ever seen the whole movie either.
We should do it.
I'd like to see it first.
Okay.
I'm just curious to see it out there.
It's on my list. There's a lot of movies to see and do, let me tell you.
How many movies are there?
Ooh, that's good trivia.
I like all... The whole design of this whole Starfighter is really cool because we're used to the whole thing you kind of get in. This is a huge Starfighter. He's got to take the whole elevator and the navigator is down there. I mean, I like that they worked it out like they did, so it's not just like, oh, I get into my little starfighter and I fly off.
I'm not dissing X-Wings
or Star Wars.
Right.
But
they found a way to make this their own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it I'm like, I buy it. I totally buy it. Yeah. And I'm sure it's based on actual...
proportions?
I'm saying designs of actual, fighter, whatever, aircraft that we have in this modern day and age in the military. I'm sure, because I'm sure there is, they have things where you have the navigator and you have the gunner.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a standard setup for, a lot of fighter planes.
Okay. Yeah, Jim?
I was just looking at some of the tearing on the...
there is what?
The video tearing, the noise in the video.
Oh, that's right. Don't touch the big red button.
Yeah, exactly.
I really like the Death Blossom that they have over at TGI Fridays.
Is that the new one with buffalo sauce?
Yeah, it's really good.
That's a great name, the Death Blossom.
No, that'd be Outback, because they have the awesome blossom.
But you know what's interesting? I like how they didn't... they withhold all information from him until like the last possible moment. Now... just as they're taking off, he says, everyone else is dead, it's just you.
I love the fact they're yelling at each other. There's no intercom.
Yeah.
It's more dramatic.
Okay, see, I'll give you that. I think Greg was in on the con on that one.
I think
like keeping that from him because they knew that he was freaked out before.
Yeah.
Or maybe not. Maybe it was just kind of a thing where it didn't even occur to him to tell him because he's back. He's there to fight and, well, you know,
goes,
ready to go. So
it, goes back
it
to
doesn't
whole,
matter.
It goes
it's
back
just
to,
what it is.
It goes back to the whole thing of that. They just recruited him. They never asked him. They never said, oh, come
yeah.
on. He says, no, okay, fine. We'll take you back. But
no one
yeah.
ever even offered him any training.
It's nothing. Just it's
just
like
here you go.
Just go here. Mm-hmm. Move here. Go there. You're going to do it. Okay, fine. We're doing this now. There was no like boot camp and no indoctrination. No
right.
nothing. You're just like, you're right in.
Good luck.
And no indoctrination of his mind whatsoever, mm-hmm. other than you have to fight the fight.
Right. And I love this, that it totally states it right there. Like, he's just the total, hopeless, romantic, will, you know, fight desperately and die in battle if we fail, kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Not very practical, you know. The ultimate positive thinker, if you will.
Oh, there's that old CG effects again.
This is Luke in the.
What's totally practicing with the lightsaber and
the
little zapper thingy.
I mean, look, if they can remake RoboCop, if they can remake who knows what, they can probably remake this.
I actually would prefer a sequel, but.
Okay, a sequel. Well, look, Tron essentially was a sequel, and it was a remake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tron Legacy, I'm sorry. Let's be clear.
It was both. It was both. I thought it worked. I liked that. I liked the second Tron movie. There were some things that could have been better, but I liked it.
The script.
Mm-hmm. I love the wheezing laugh thing, by the way. That's a great character element that he added to that. I don't know if that was in the script. Probably not. That seems like something an actor would add because the wheezing laugh
Greg?
That Greg does. Yeah.
That would be in conjunction with the director, yes. They would consult.
Well, I'm sure.
That looks like Calabasas. It really does. I'm just saying.
Fair enough.
Well, it's a little hilly for Calabasas.
It could be anywhere. Could be Tahonga. I'm really curious.
Mm-hmm. So, yes. I don't know.
What?
I just think it.
So he's.
I'm not sure about
what.
I don't know. It's in between scene.
Yeah, because this is where she kind of.
I love how she's petting him with a weed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's how I show love.
Well, see, this is what I think is... Well, okay, I know they thought it was interesting. I think it's interesting that they have the Alex substitute, but it's a weird kind of subplot to have because it takes us away from... In other words, it asks us to... I don't know. I mean, I can understand if it, you know... How does it relate to the original plot? Fine, he's the target and he's got to avoid it. But then there's a whole, well, I can show you Alex coming of age type of thing, or how do I deal with girls? It doesn't, it's not a straight line back to what this is, this part of the story that we're looking at here, which is the core, which is defeating, you know,
so you
defending
Rylos. Diffusing the story or distracting?
I don't think it's feeding the main story.
Yeah.
I think it's serving it, but I think it plays a weird number on it.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's interesting. I don't know if it necessarily pulls it off.
Yeah, you know, I think I know the whole reason for that little sort of sub story is the whole idea of getting Maggie to where she knows what Alex is actually out there doing, and she's behind him, mm-hmm. so that when he just shows up randomly in a spaceship, she's not just totally shocked and hasn't had time to process the idea and think about it and stuff.
So
like,
you're saying that this whole subplot of Alex and Maggie and the Beta is just setting up that.
That's kind of what I feel like. Like, that's the only way I can kind of see that it furthers the plot overall, because their relationship is an important part of the plot, and it's the only way to continue that relationship with him out here doing this at the same time,
mm-hmm.
right? And it ends with later. the Beta basically sacrificing himself to destroy the Hitman ship before he finishes transmitting that Alex is out there to mm-hmm. warn them. And then that's when, you know, he tells Maggie basically everything, and that's when Maggie realizes it, and there's a moment where she's like, looks to the stars and says, "I love you, Alex Rogan," and like, you know, that connects us back to him being out there. It's right at a pivotal, like, moment of battle, kind of. So there are different ways they could do it. They could have done it. I mean, this one works. But I think that's why that whole thing exists, even.
Yeah, I mean, I could see why it's there. Just in work, it doesn't work all that well. Much like the CG effects in this particular.
What are you talking about?
The cave stuff.
You know,
that's what caves look
what
like.
What I notice, the thing that the ships actually, even like that shot, it's in low light and stuff. It actually works pretty well with the texture of the rock and the like, surfaces of the planet and stuff. That's what draws attention back to that it's CGI the most, I think.
I mean, this CGI is 27 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's not bad.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know what I... In showing this to my girlfriend, like, I didn't think about this, but she didn't realize that Grig was flying the ship.
Oh.
She thought Alex was doing it, and she like thought that Grig just sort of was a passive sort of here's where to go kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But all that flying around and everything, that was all Grig, and Alex is just shooting, essentially. And
that,
you know, if you don't
fair,
realize
yeah.
are
that
you,
at
are
first,
you sure?
Yeah,
okay.
Because he's talking
he's
about
a navigator.
I thought by putting you in the thick of battle, da 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 da, he's the one that flew after the guy.
Mm.
You know,
right? Ooh, Alex is pissed off.
Except that Grig did go, "Look out, Alex," when the missiles were coming at him.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I wonder if it had to do with that he thought Alex should shoot at the guy to keep him from, or maybe it was reactionary. That is a good point, though.
I don't know.
Because it's almost like he was wanting Alex to do something about
wanting
it.
Wanting him to move the ship?
I think that's a script problem.
I think that would be a script problem.
I think that would be a script problem.
Yeah.
The intertubes, actually, IMDb says that this was shot. Hang on. Let's see. Do we have an address?
An address? I want to go there.
9411 Soledad Canyon Road.
You're
in Canyon Country.
Me.
Really? It actually gives you the address.
I have no idea why they have this.
But I did say Canyon Country at the beginning of the film.
And where's Canyon Country?
I don't know. It's somewhere near here.
I think it's
yeah, well, we know it's shot in a canyon somewhere.
Isn't it the next valley over?
I think Canyon Country's up
after
it's north of the two.
Yeah, yeah,
or
that's what I'm talking about.
Tens,
where Trey used to live.
Yeah, oh, actually it's between the 210 and I think it's between the 210 and the 1 and the 5, I think. Could be wrong though.
Okay. All right, I can buy that. Yeah, that's where La Crescenta up there.
Yeah.
Like
it, yeah, the La Crescenta
yeah,
area.
Yeah, not that far east.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right, well, it's somewhere up in there.
So hard to keep track of all the cities. See, I've lived here 10 years, and I can't keep track of all the little cities.
Was that officer just...
He was taking a leak behind the Delecki's baby food sign. And, of course, he doesn't notice that there's something in his back seat, and he smells something bad, and he turns...
I like his haircut, by the way.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Very 80s.
Yeah, do you think he's like the stunt coordinator that they...
No doubt. Something like that.
I don't think so.
Well, he definitely does a stunt right here. I mean, that's pretty much a stunt.
What?
Anything the, people are laying hands on people, like doing something to them, that's technically a stunt.
I don't think they need a stuntman for that.
I didn't say they did. I'm just saying.
They could have.
If they used the stunt coordinator, it would make sense.
Maybe.
You're just all kinds of contrary today.
With my 6,000
The carbs are messing
cravings.
With your brain, man.
I like his pictures of his kids.
Yeah. By the way, this would have been total fantasy back then. Now it's like, oh, let me just pull it up on my phone. Yeah.
Hey, let me show you my iPhone.
But,
yeah.
But what's interesting is that he said, "I live below ground, but so many of those pictures were taken
above ground.
Probably just on the other side of the hill from where the trailer park is.
Yeah.
I love it that he never actually holds the picture toward him where he can see. Kind of does, but it's sideways, and it's more pointed toward him. Like, he never, like, reaches out to show him.
We don't know that.
I guess you could have in between there.
You know, this reminds me of Phantom Menace when they're traveling through the middle of the planet.
Oh. You had to go there. You had to go there.
It is totally there. What?
No, wait. You're talking about when they were underwater on Naboo.
When they were going through the planet.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
On their way to the other side.
How else do you think there were anyone was going to go through the planet?
That's a good point. What am I thinking?
I'm not sure.
Just like in the video game. Greg really fills several roles here. He kind of is the wise man with the sage advice to guide the hero.
Wait a second.
On his way.
Well, basically, he's part Obi-Wan and he's part Han Solo.
Yeah, good way to put it.
And then Robert Preston is the other part of Obi-Wan. So you see when Robert
/ C-3PO
when Centauri died, basically that was like Obi-Wan dying.
Oh yeah, good point.
So we need a Centauri to come back,
just like Obi-Wan.
Yeah,
right,
Alex.
Yeah, and you're right, and
trust
actually
your senses.
That's right. Well,
Greg is filling that role.
And you have no moment with that. Greg is always there with him, even though he has, Alex still has to fulfill his destiny.
Mm-hmm. Hey, can you click on that address? I want to see if it pulls up an actual
name of a small town where Alex lived. That's what IMDb says. Oh, what, you want me to put it into the Google or something?
No, it's a link. I want to see where it goes. Maybe it just goes to Google Maps.
No, it just goes to the last Starfighter.
Lame. I have a question. Do you have the...
It says, welcome to Silver Lake on that sign.
That's where they're all hanging out.
Because
that's where all the young kids go hang out these days.
When she said at the beginning, we're going to Silver Lake, I'm like, they're going down to Silver Lake?
Yeah,
the
right?
Country? What? Okay.
The heck?
No, I guess it must be a real Silver Lake.
Yeah, look at it. It looks silver. Mm.
It looks so
silver.
If by silver you mean murky.
So dark it's reflective.
There's silver hiding in there.
What's going on? Someone's fighting under that blanket.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm sorry. That's embarrassing to even watch.
I know, right?
This is Catherine Mary Stewart. You have to know what you're doing with Catherine Mary Stewart.
They're so close to... Did they look awfully close to that large fire?
It's the lens. You had a question there, Duncan?
I'm sorry? Oh, do you have IMDb Pro or just regular IMDb?
Regular old IMDb.
Just check it.
Do you have the good IMDb?
Yeah. Do you have the one that matters? Or, do you have the one that everyone gets? That
I love the fact this guy still has his hat on.
I got the
how
one
does he
that
keep his hat on?
Because he's a redneck.
Guys that wear hats like that.
How does he keep his hat on?
Tape.
Staples.
Yeah, exactly.
Nails.
Double stick.
Nail gun.
Hair clips.
That's so lame.
It is lame. It's kind of stupid.
The fact that she's responding to it is more lame than it is saying
it. It's all kind of lame. That's the whole thing. I'm just like, come on.
You know what's funny, though? What? Watching this with my girlfriend, she's like, oh, wow, that's really nice. You should say that to me sometime.
Really?
I'm not kidding.
Because it's romantic.
Except for the part about
shut up and talk
all the other girls. Yeah.
Oh, the other girls.
No, the shove and talk dirty. That's definitely on the docket.
The other girls meant nothing to me.
Right.
Women always like to hear that.
And by the way, if Carrie is listening to this, that face that she made just before hitting him, she does that to me all the time. It's awesome. She's hilarious.
See, he just.
Now, see here, this is, of course, where it now connects back to our main story.
See, he's heard.
Because he tells her, and then suddenly there's proof. Oh, look, I'm a robot.
Yeah, it was a little convenient. And, of course, the alien was there to hear him say it.
Right then.
Way, 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 way too convenient.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's the usual, I'm going with you because...
I say so.
Right.
So I can find out what's going on.
Because I'm a woman.
Kind of cliche.
Right.
No, it's a cliche. It's just bad writing.
It's like this her man.
Are you reaching for what? A Frito?
Let me see if I can do this without getting it on the mics.
Okay, that's right. We're trying to eat without eating in the mics.
Do you like some salsa with that, Jim? Are you sure?
I think I finished the salsa. Okay, so now we have the emperor, so to speak. He's
spazzing.
He's a total spaz, right? The whole thing is he's for a bad guy. I mean, he can be bad, and he did have the guy's brains sucked out, which is really disgusting. Yeah. But
can I just say something real quick?
He's not that threatening.
That giant mothership thing follows right after these ships, not long from now. But the hole they cut in that force field is certainly not big enough for them to get through.
Well, we can assume
maybe if they turn sideways.
It's been growing bigger and bigger throughout the show.
They've been making it bigger.
Right, but I think they're waiting for the ship to pass over where they're sitting right now. And when they just let those ships through, it was only maybe half as wide. The hole was only half as wide as the ship.
He's telling Alex to shut down.
I think it has to do with the angle.
Right.
It's the angle. You couldn't tell it was big enough.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure that it was the angle, and you just couldn't tell.
Okay.
So the hole is big enough for the ship to go through.
All right, I'll go with suspension of disbelief, or maybe they turn sideways. And
I think the wings collapse in.
Ooh, I like that. Like it transforms into a missile.
So now, I mean, here they've really truncated. It's like now she's got to take it all in the car ride. And
yes,
so really, did they have to have the conversation so that you could say, don't talk, drive?
I know, right? It's all
that was a little lame-o.
I love how they converted like a light fixture.
It reminds me, you ever seen They Live?
No.
Oh, They Live is awesome. It's an awesome, bad John Carpenter film. But
I love that movie.
There's also the signal back to the planet. That's what that reminds me of a little bit. You know, they have the big side light. Well, they have essentially the transporting signal. Oh, They Live is just.
You'll have to tell me about it after this.
You know, this is interesting how he tells her to jump and basically he sacrifices himself and she didn't.
Well, that's his whole function.
Yeah. Yeah. And he just saved Alex. And his planet, and everybody else.
But see, she's still not sure.
No, she's sure.
Well, right then, she's looking at him like it was Alex.
She didn't know what else to call him, but she saw his innards.
That's true. And that's a very intimate thing, seeing someone else's innards.
See, once again, we see the weakness of the so-called emperor. He says, at the last Starfighter is dead. We go. Yeah.
Massive assumption.
Obviously.
That's right.
How could it not be?
It's Stewie. We should remake it with Stewie. Stewie is the emperor.
Oh, man.
That actually would be a really funny.
If Seth MacFarlane is listening to this right now, could you please make a Family Guy Last Starfighter?
That would be hilarious.
Would love it so much.
The Last Starfighter is dead, obviously.
No, you know what would be even funnier? Stewie playing Zur, but the two guys who are commanding the ship are hand puppets that he's working.
See?
And he's doing all the voices.
Wait, how did the picture get mounted?
He just stuck it up there with...
See, here you go.
Oh, how does she know?
She looks off into the stars, but right when he's screwing up... Like, I love that moment. That's a great moment, but that's the whole point of the whole subplot to bring her, you know, that around to connect. So now she's proud of him, and she's like, ooh, wow, you know, he's out, like, saving the universe. And then when he shows up in the ship, it's like, wow, for reals, even. And, you know, she's on board. Literally.
He is now a man.
Right.
He's like a galactic badass and stuff. It's so cool. I love it.
I like that eye visor thing.
Me too. I want one.
I love the fact that they look like they're tree people.
The makeup is really good. I know I keep on saying it. But even on him, his makeup is really good. Zur.
Yeah, the huge forehead piece.
You can see
the blending edges right in the smile lines.
But it's very good.
That's good.
It really worked out well. It reminds me a little of the makeup on Babylon 5 with the Minbari.
I love the fact that he has no idea that they're taking, and he walks backwards.
Right.
Completely compliant.
It's like he's a total, like, wimp.
Well.
And they have no targeting, apparently.
Apparently.
These cannons just don't target at all.
No, they just.
Well, this is very reminiscent of running the trench in Star Wars, right? Death Star, like, trench run thing.
He's got to get
the small target, whatever.
You got to get the turret.
Those also had large turrets firing laser bolts that didn't hit them.
Yep. Oh, and now.
I like this. That's a cool little, like, the missile flip back thing. That's pretty cool. I like it.
Yeah.
It's a nice set.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I like the set.
And so here.
I'll take that.
That's right. And wham. Oh, finally he hits someone with that thing.
That's a fun mask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they made that nowadays,
and
he would have
garbage
like,
shoot.
He would have like exactly right.
He would have like pod, yeah.
stuck him through the face with the scepter if this was nowadays.
Which would have been fine.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's a Cylon.
That's what right? I was gonna say, yeah. It's a Cylon voice.
Oh well, yeah. I hadn't connected that.
Well, actually you know what it is. It's that they're talking with a throat.
Well, yeah, with the stoma.
Is that what it's called?
I think it's called a stoma.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the kind of sound you get from that.
Well, I don't know. I can
Which
look
actually,
it up.
Right, I've
Which actually
the
makes
device,
a lot of sense.
I didn't know it was called that.
But that actually makes a lot of sense, because if they don't really use their mouth, then they
Or
do
if
sound.
If my larva theory holds and they didn't Ooh. Have developed vocal cords yet.
That's
if,
see,
if
it
my
is
larva
all,
theory holds.
Mm-hmm. I think your larva theory holds.
Thank you. Less developed facial features.
That's right, and therefore...
More like insects.
A
I like.
Might
See,
actually
they're gonna. So now, I love how they're gonna do the death blossom.
Oh yeah, the dramatic opening of the death
sauce.
Blossom portals.
That's right.
Oh, did you find the death blossom online?
No, I was looking up stoma. Actually, stoma might be an eye thing. Now that I think of it,
we should have some death blossoms delivered from Outback while we're taping this. Yeah, he has way too many eye wrinkles to be 18.
Yeah, now I got to tell you, I mean, I buy him as Alex. The one thing I don't buy is how he's captivated by the fantasy of the game. I mean, I get that he's good at the game, but part of being good at a game, well, not necessarily. You can be good at a game and you can be captivated by the fantasy of the game. You know, so I can play Half-Life. I like Half-Life. Mm-hmm. I'm not that good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I get into it, ooh, that's really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I know that he's supposed to totally be into Starfighter, but I never got the feeling, that didn't communicate to me. I didn't get it. Does that make sense? I didn't feel that he was feeling, oh, wow, this is Starfighter and I'm in Starfighter.
Yeah, that would have been nice to see.
It's like,
yeah, that,
it's like playing Half-Life and then being sucked into Half-Life. You'd be like, I'm in Half-Life. Or, I'm
yeah,
in
he never
I'm,
did have that
I,
moment where
I'm
he's
in
like,
Halo.
Oh, wow. Well, he had a little one where he's like looking at the displays before they even took off, going, "Oh, it's just like the game back home."
Well, that's my point.
But
I think,
it wasn't
I think,
very
I think
satisfactory,
even
in
with
that
the
sense.
Game. In other words, even when he wasn't playing the game, it's not like he was like, "Oh, this is all about like, gotta play Starfighter and you know the whole thing." And then so when he's in it, he's totally in it.
I know
this is the coolest.
I love the fact that it spins him around.
I know, and then it goes 360.
By the way, this would be like, in terms of video games, standard like. Weaponry is you have your normal guns, you have some kind of missile, and then you've got some kind of ultimate destruction thing, right? So like they never show the ultimate destruction device on the actual video game he plays, but they have it when he actually goes out in a real one,
which is
I
cool.
Think that's
yeah,
fun.
This well, is a prototype. This was the
well,
one
right.
of it, one
and
of
this prototype for the game, you know, for the next game. You know, it's like Doom with the BFG,
mm-hmm.
BFG 9000. Which, of course, you use in the last round and to slay the last demon.
Yeah.
If you get there.
Ramming speed. What ooh, speed is ooh, that,
they,
by the way?
They didn't focus in on him there. They were soft at the end.
Oh, were they?
Oh, yeah. They didn't get the final focus mark.
Nice.
But I like this. It's like, okay, lesson number one. If you're going to try and ram a ship, make sure there's not a moon right behind it so you can pull up
yes,
in time.
Exactly.
Seriously.
This is a rule.
Love
I
it.
Think they teach that at the academy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally.
I don't think they went to the academy.
Oh, by the way, I noticed something in regards to earlier when we're talking about him saying, look out, Alex. During that firefight, Alex actually shot two of the missiles that were coming at him.
I saw that.
So
yeah.
He may have meant shoot the missiles, and he didn't do it in time, so Grig had to, like, you know, and at the same time, Alex told him evade when those ships were coming at him. He yells back, evade, you know, for him to move.
What's interesting is Grig was able to connect his cell phone battery to get the repower the ship.
Yeah, that's very ingenious.
I'm telling you, that iPhone works, does wonders.
Like right them. Now they're thinking.
Everybody shake.
They're yeah. just, and now
oh, those guys all went
the drones
powered
are
down.
All ooh, that's yeah, interesting.
right now they're thinking, we should have developed shields before we took this giant ship out.
Yeah.
Are these guys the only guys in it?
I think they're the only guys. Well, actually, no, these could be the only guys that are in charge. All the others are slugs.
Right.
I like this. It's like, what do we do? And the guy says, just looks at him and says, we die.
That's a great moment. I love that moment.
Though
now suddenly this ship, though, is as big as the moon, and well, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, the perspective. I mean, it should have gone in further.
Much. Yeah. Yeah, it should have got much smaller, yeah.
Much smaller, but okay, we'll buy it.
Maybe the moon is small. Maybe it's tiny.
So now this is... Now, you see, this is like at the end of Star Wars, the big parade,
right,
whatever.
Right.
We're congratulating you for having saved our planet.
Enderon.
And Phantom Menace. And Attack of the Clones.
Man, why you gotta bring that into this so much?
Wait a second. Zuro escaped. How do they know Zuro escaped?
I guess it was my fault.
Wait, see, that's the problem.
Zuro escaped?
Well, they do know that Zuro escaped, but all we saw was him going to an escape hatch. We didn't see his pod go off or fly off like Darth Vader, but he did.
Right.
And of course, the sequel is set up because Zuro has made his escape.
Right.
Here, wait. Let me put this red cloth on.
And make my visage more palatable to you.
Yeah. Suddenly I have a full head of hair. A lustrous full head of hair. Right.
And I'm happy about it. See? Oh. That is lame.
I
like that they brought him back.
I don't mind that they brought him back, but I'm like, but that means Grig should have known. Well, I'm just saying.
Dude, I don't know everything about every animal species. If you assume that there are so many different like species of sentient humanoid in the universe, how would you know every single thing about every single one? Or even how bad he was hurt,
well,
and whether or not
Sarah
he'd recover from that.
Obviously.
Okay, then
clearly.
Well, then who took his body and then discovered, oh no, let's not put it into the furnace or autopsy?
Well,
and...
probably the Rylans. I mean, they deal with all kinds of different species all the time. Grig's species might not. He might not be educated in that particular way.
Okay.
I don't know, dude.
All right.
Come on, man.
All right. So now he says, now he says, I'll stay. He knows what his destiny is to help.
It's like, but I miss my girl.
It's like, yeah, well, it's like Babylon 5 when Ivanova decides to stay.
I've never seen any Babylon 5.
Never seen Babylon. It's a really interesting film.
Or Farscape. I'm sorely lacking in my.
I never saw Farscape.
I've heard Farscape is really good.
Babylon 5 is actually.
B5 had some nice stuff.
B5 is really well written. It's not.
Slow episodes.
But the directing, I felt the directing was very uneven. In terms of some of them were strong.
I'm
and
sure
just,
they were changing directors all the time.
I just felt sometimes the execution was just like, whoa. But I just, overall, the writing, not all of the writing, but the whole arc of everything, really, really good. See. Okay, now that's the setup for last thing. She's about to tell him that, oh, he's dead. And of course, all of a sudden, the wind starts again.
Yes.
I get the wind thing, but really, can we write it a little differently?
Perfect timing.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, movies like this, fantasy, sci-fi, all these have like supernatural like coincidence, you know.
Yeah, but if you were going to do
a
fun coincidence would have been him coming in his Pinto that he has besides his truck and then Alex landing on his Pinto.
That's a good one. I like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Some kind of humor to it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Something a little more. Of course, you know, with the way they're doing the CG of the ship, they probably couldn't have pulled off the whole Pinto crushing thing.
And look, the ship stops at the top of the trees.
Yeah, I wondered about that. Even the first time I saw it, I'm like, is it landing on a building?
No, it's just that tall. Because there's a hill right behind
there.
You got to go behind the building.
Kind of, sort of, not really, though. They show it on the same level as the building in a second. As far as the base level.
And the tree was at the top, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We'll see in a second. We certainly will. And, of course, she has to go by the... video game. That's a big ship done in CGI with smoke over.
I like the size of that ship.
Oh no, it's a good size.
Yeah, I mean it's not you know this.
So the thing is here they're
compact car that
here,
has
here they're trying to blend essentially in this reality they're trying to blend photoreal with real actually photo with CG. See now we cut to the other thing. So now you're actually as opposed to having it in different space.
very Disney looking.
Yeah, the person kind of looked Tron-ish at the top when in the elevator movement at first.
Yeah, because you didn't want him moving because there's no way they could ever do that. Now, here's the other problem. If he comes down like this, don't you think he'd want to at least let everyone know who he was before he'd think that someone would shoot him?
You know what? He's probably not thinking that they're terribly violent.
They wet the ground, too, so there wasn't a bunch of dust being kicked out.
Yeah, I like that. Ooh, good call. That.
Yes.
Good spot.
And, of course, he's like, I got to get this helping off because it's all misting up.
Yeah.
Yes,
he's like,
is.
Well,
she kind of
anticipated let's play
that
some
kit.
Gland Kiss. Games.
Oh, and there's that. The gun.
See?
Grandma has a weapon.
Grandma has a shotgun. She would have shot
him. Oh, yeah, but...
She would have shot the alien.
I don't think he...
So she shoots him anyway.
If I were him, I don't think I'd be worried about someone coming and shooting me.
Now, see, now here's my other big problem. Once again, dealing with the group scene, here's Alex, and they're all like, there's a huge spaceship and no one's scared. And everyone's like, talk at the same time.
Alex is there now.
I know, it's just...
That guy in the back was scared. He wasn't even talking.
She's got a great coronet of a voice there. Mm-hmm.
Who stole my truck? Like, they're going to know what a beta unit is.
Right.
Oh, it's a beta unit.
Well, you know, I mean, how... You go someplace like to the military. You come back speaking the
terms.
Now
he comes down with his
no
helmet
one
off.
Thinks.
So you see, Grandma could have shot him too. See, at least the kid likes the aliens.
He may not have even known that Granny had the shotgun, because how often would Granny pull out the shotgun?
I don't know. This is Granny.
Anyway, here's a question.
Yeah,
they don't have the translator chip. Is he speaking English?
That is a good point.
Well, no, he's got a translator chip, so you have to assume that what he's speaking is then translated to English.
Except earlier they explained, no, what you hear is English.
Oh, because of the Jim. Translator chip on you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, there you go. There goes the logic.
Maybe there are other things. Maybe this guy knows enough... or like had like a, I don't know, a brain download or something
maybe
for English.
Mm.
Maybe. Well, yeah, but you'd think they would show that. I mean, I like the idea that he speaks English.
Maybe there is a two-way translator. Maybe. I mean, if there's a one-way translator, why not a two-way translator?
I'm thinking. Yes. I think there's a two-way translator. You can set it so you can whatever you say gets absorbed within a sphere of sound, and the only thing that gets put out is the language you want to have heard.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well,
of course, theoretically.
It would have been interesting then. I mean, if they were to do a remake, you know, some sort of
thing right here.
Vocalizer that's flashing mm-hmm. a light so that you know that it's working.
That's right.
And theoretically, if that were happening, his lips or his mouth would still be moving like his native language.
That's
and
right.
And you would just hear whatever yours
he'd,
was.
He'd be like a bad dubbed film.
Exactly.
That would be funny.
Or well dubbed film. And if his translator is a little out, so of course his translation's really off, and you'd have to hit it a few times until it works.
Right, of course.
Coming out with the Russian and Swahili.
No, just your grammar would be all moved around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then in that case, quite frankly, what about Centauri? Centauri was an alien, yet he could still speak English.
He seemed to know several languages.
So Centauri, he did build the game, and he did build it in English.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean whenever he builds a game and puts it on a different planet, he has to learn that planet's language?
Maybe. But I'm just saying there might be other devices, because when he first took Alex up, he speaks to Alex in English, or at least what he hears is English. And then when they're approaching the base, he talks to them in their language, and that's what Alex hears, or at least we as the
Correct.
Audience hear it as
Correct.
Though we're Alex.
Yes. Oh, no, it's the
chicken. Why are we under attack?
Exactly. We have to go there right this minute.
He says so. He says what it is. He says they're holding off the radar of the time. Basically, they don't want to be detected.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, it's...
Okay, yeah. See?
There you go.
So we have the ticking clock. So we have the mm-hmm. true ticking clock.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the call of the hero?
The what now?
The call of the hero?
I don't know. I'm throwing out my Joseph
Campbell. Yeah, it's a little directing... film class stuff.
Mm-hmm. I know. I think we had the call several times, eh? I don't know. That was earlier.
Come on.
That was
go,
that,
Mags.
That was Double Sons.
Go, Mags.
Moment.
Don't let him go.
Right now, Alex is thinking, I guess I'm going to have to get used to bald women.
Yeah, really. Haha. But they can come back right away.
She, you know, she runs forward, grabs onto the bottom of it.
You know, the guy in the hat looks familiar. The guy, the redneck guy in the hat, he looks familiar.
He does. You're right. He does. I wonder if he did anything
else. Who is he?
I'll find out in a second.
I don't know, but I think if they redo this or do a sequel, they should do a Robert Preston all CG. He's so
nice.
Great. Wait, why would you know that? Why would he know that?
Yeah, how does he know it packs a punch, exactly?
Who knows? People say all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, he's seen the video game, and his house is the closest to where it landed. So he would have been closest to hearing it land or something.
So that's how he knows it packs
a
punch.
There's a lot of stuff I'll buy, but that may not be one of the things.
Well, people say a lot of crap. And see, that's almost like foreshadowing here too for a sequel.
Well, yeah, you know, everyone's going to know about us, and
I would love to see where, like, in, you know, 20 something years later, Lewis is now the top starfighter, or he and Alex are sort of head to head, you know, for notoriety.
I think now their children would now be the starfighters.
Yeah, I guess Lewis is younger enough,
because Lewis is probably
eight. Seven?
Yeah, so he's like probably 35 now.
Yeah, but he could still be a starfighter. It's not like, you know, it's not like you're a Navy SEAL.
No, but still, you know, the younger upstarts would be coming up right behind you.
True.
All right, so now who was our country boy?
What was his name? I don't know.
Otis? Jack Blake? No. Yeah, Blake.
Otis,
Peter
Otis
Nelson. I think it was Peter Nelson. Yeah.
Oh, don't know who he is. Interesting.
Cheerleader 2. Where was Cheerleader 1?
She was in the back.
See,
of
Will
the,
Wheaton, Lewis's friend.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my
he
gosh.
He didn't have any lines that they kept.
Did we see him again?
No. I don't think. If we did, I can't remember where it was.
I think they cut stuff out of the film. I get the feeling they cut like little stuff here and there.
Yeah, but he was the kid with the red shirt early in the first like introductory scene running around.
Okay, the best thing about DVDs, in my opinion, are the extras. I just love the extras on DVDs.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is what makes them stand out over something like VHS.
Do you remember when Laserdisc was out and the Criterion discs had the extras? Criterion started putting all these extras on the Laserdiscs, and that was the neatest thing. So everybody, I know I did, wanted to get a Laserdisc player and get Criterion discs.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God I was not able to do that because I was young and poor.
Right. Well, and that would have been something because I remember distinctly being really excited to see a making of whenever that came on TV, you know, of a movie that I loved. And now we just get them with the, you know, basically we get that with the extras. Usually.
Apogee. Oh my God. Apogee.
Not always. I mean, sometimes, you know, it depends on it. On what
well,
it is.
I say basically because most of the time, there's something that focuses on some aspect of production,
right?
Or even voiceover, or even what am I trying to say? Commentary by the filmmakers is a sort of making of because they're talking about making the film. Usually, I mean,
yeah,
just you would never have been able to get that before, and now we take it for granted.
So,
I don't take it for granted at all. No, I mean, I seriously, that's the best.
So, how does this hold up?
Not great. You know, I mean, it was so quickly dated. I mean, as you expressed earlier, within 10 years we had Jurassic Park. So this was very quickly, you know, dated. In fact, even at the time when you looked at those effects, it was like, again, as I said in the beginning, it pulled me out of the story.
Supercomputer, the Cray XMP.
Wow.
Which probably our laptops now are stronger than the Cray XMP.
Oh, look, video game available from Atari Inc.
Well, there you go. You were saying, Jim?
Well, I was saying that, you know, even when watching this, when it came out, looking at the CG scenes pulled me out of the story a little bit.
Right.
Now, you know, obviously I was like, no, I want to believe this, and so I was okay with it, but... like you said, within a few years, you were looking at Jurassic Park dinosaurs running across a field in daylight.
But I still think then we were able to look past some of the effects to at least enjoy the story somewhat.
Oh, the story itself? Oh, no, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. Right. I mean, I could totally see a story redoing this with little handheld PSPs, and they, you know, like I said, and they click into or somehow they link to drones that these kids are actually. I mean, I like the idea.
Well, that's the whole Orson Scott Card
thing.
That's what then they'd have to essentially do, and which I think they've been trying to develop Ender's Game for years.
It's fantastic.
Personally, I think it holds up great. I mean, I think that the story elements are timeless, really. And yeah, it takes a lot from other movies that we've all seen at different times.
Right.
But I don't feel like it takes me out of the thing. Obviously, the CGI is dated, but I kind of agree with you, Serge, that even at the time, at least I was a lot more forgiving of that, especially because I was kind of a younger kid when I saw this.
Mm-hmm.
And my suspension of disbelief was stronger, you know, at an age like that. And I think that just sort of carried over, and you know, it for me at least, it doesn't bother me. I mean, it's obvious, but it doesn't take me out of the story, really.
I guess when I say it took me out of the story, I had to consciously maintain the suspension of disbelief. But you definitely noticed how odd those scenes were. I mean, the inside of that cave did not look like a cave. The mountain that the starbase was built on did not look like a mountain.
Yeah.
You know, it was just simple things. I was like, oh,
but at the same time,
okay.
I must say that matte effects done not perfectly, also they take me out more because that suddenly looks two-dimensional to me. This at least still retains a look of three-dimensionality as far as we can see on a flat screen. You know, that at least for me, that the matte stuff that's not as good takes me out more.
Yeah, these were moving shots, so that would give you the effect of three dimensions as opposed to a matte painting. That if it's not properly lined up or if the colors
lit or whatever,
or the colors aren't properly keyed, then yeah, I could see that.
Right.
But all in all, I think it's a fun story.
Yeah,
it's a really fun story, and I like the creatures, and I liked it.
Yeah, I think it definitely deserves a sequel and or remake of some kind. I mean, I like the concept, and I think there are a lot of ways you could do it, as you pointed out.
I think the difference is that I remember when it first came out and there was talk of the effects. It's kind of like, okay, you kind of knew going in, oh, the effects are going to be X and whatever, as opposed to coming to it not knowing what you're seeing, and then, oh, this is what this is, and kind of accepting it for what it is. For some reason, the thing that pops to mind is when, you know, sometimes when you go to see plays, and sometimes some of the best plays are like community theater or, you know, done by people who may not have all the technical chops, but they have so much enthusiasm that it kind of surpasses it. I saw a production of The Seagull once, which was done by in community theater, was actually better than practically than any other production I've ever seen. And a big part of it was the enthusiasm just kind of fed it and fed into the spirit of the whole thing. So while technically the comedy came out of it.
No.
Which was cool.
Really?
Oh, seriously. Ugh. And it wasn't belabored. And it's just like well, because his plays do have comedy, you know, stuck in them. And you just have to find a way to pull it out. And my point being is that in the same respect, I don't want to say that it's the enthusiasm, but in a way the effort, in other words, they did the CG, but somehow this may be because I remember when it came out. Maybe if I came at it differently, I'd be like, oh, forget, I don't care. But I think there's enough elements of the story, and I think, you know, Lance Guest and Catherine Mary Stewart, and definitely Dan O'Hurley and Robert Preston are good enough that it supports it enough. It's sort of like I can ignore that and kind of pay attention to that. Would I like it to be perfect altogether? Absolutely.
Sure.
But I can pay attention to these other things, and the set design and the costume design is all good.
Yeah, I had
and other parts of the script are really quite good.
Yeah, I had no problem forgiving those the CGI.
I don't forgive it 100%.
Yeah,
but I can forgive it somewhat.
But because again, like you said, Robert Preston and the rest of the supporting cast were awesome.
Mm.
It was fun. It was a fun movie. And you know, Lance is a little older than 18. I don't know that I buy him at 18. I kind of got the feeling when I saw it before that he was just kind of had been floundering for a couple of years after high school.
Okay, so I'd believe like, that you know, more.
Okay, 20.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I'd believe that more.
Yeah.
You know, they're all talking about going to college, and maybe I just made the assumption that meant that they had just or were going to finish high school soon or had just finished it or something.
Mm-hmm. And Catherine Mary Stewart was stellar. Stellar.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And that picture of her.
If Catherine Mary Stewart's listening to this, you were stellar.
And if you're still
that
available.
Was Sarah's talking, by the way.
That, get it? It's a pun, but whatever.
Stellar. Oh, I get it.
But she was.
Oh, by the way, I want to make one more point.
Night of the Comet's really great.
I'll check that
she's
out.
She's really good.
I'll check that out. Yeah.
I've not seen that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's good or bad, but speaking of other sci-fi films, we've all seen bad ones. The bad ones
I've not.
Are usually bad. I mean, they often have bad special effects or less than stellar, but at the same time, they also have bad acting.
Yes.
This had decent acting. This was pretty solid. Now, the script needed some work on a few parts. But I think that's, by and large, what makes this hold up more than anything to do with the special effects or all
actually,
that stuff.
Actually, I'm trying to think if there was actually
like
a bad acting bit in it.
I don't think so. They all seemed like real people.
For me,
that's what
the bad acting was the two group scenes.
Yeah, I agree. The video game and the gather
directing.
At the end.
That's not bad acting. That's bad directing.
This is a good point.
It's a combination of both. It's whatever it is. Those scenes just with the multiple people, it did not work. Mm-hmm. It's just like, what is this? Okay, fine, whatever. Let's just keep on going.
And again, ultimately, maybe not even bad directing as much as it's a script. You know,
could be.
It was scripted that way. They didn't write a scene where they were sitting, or if they wrote it, they didn't show it.
No, I'd say in that particular instance, that becomes directing because you take what's written on the page, so you organize it so that actually can be executed and staged believably so that, you know, it can be cut together believably so we can actually have something that makes sense and we don't go roll a rise.
Yeah, because, you know, in the script, that would have read like, a crowd gathers to watch Alex, and they're excited, you know.
And then
a crowd gathers to look at the amazing spaceship that just landed in the trailer park.
And you have little bits of dialogue,
right. And then there's a lot of, like you say, like directorial sort of structuring that's got to happen.
I'm not saying it's easy, but you know, you just got to make it work. And for me, those are the two scenes that really, in terms of the acting, did not work. Otherwise, I think the whole thing pretty much held together well.
Yeah, I think the sets were nice. The location, the trailer park was a nice location.
Oh,
I think they certainly made it lively and
it was
entertaining.
Solid. Yeah,
had an interesting cast of characters that I'd like to see more of, actually.
See, it'd be a good TV series. No, just kidding. kidding.
How would you do that?
Yeah,
at the end of every episode, you'd have to come back to Earth.
Right, does it take place on Earth? Does it take place up there? Like what?
Well, you could do episodes where, you know, killers come to Earth and have to evade them, you know.
I suppose it's doable, but that's challenging.
Kodan killers?
Never mind. Okay, write better characters. Just give them a few minutes to breathe. I mean, it's likely that maybe there was more footage and they just got cut for time and for whatever and just didn't, you know, add to the whole thing.
So as a viewer, I want to encourage you to watch the extras and see if that's the case.
Yeah. And the other thing is the subplot, the subplot with Beta. Not quite sure about it. Interesting idea, not quite sure if it really worked for me.
Yeah, yeah,
It did put the pieces in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
Yes.
But did you really need it to do that?
And was it the best way to do it?
Because it becomes an odd thing, because then in a way, I'm sorry to talk like this, but symbolically, on that psychic level, it becomes sort of a story of his doppelganger. The guy looks just like him and is supposed to be like him, and so then you have to play that story, and that story wasn't really played out all that much, and it becomes like a whole other thing that in a way demands more to be done with it, which wasn't done. And rightfully so, because then becomes that story and not the other story. So then what do you do with it? So it's like it's an interesting conceit. I won't fault it. It was an interesting
how
experiment.
How does that pay off other than her getting to go, oh, you know, I believe it when he comes down in a spaceship. Do you really need it?
That's the only payoff because the
doppelganger, I mean, the Beta unit basically gives up his own identity to the bad guy and then has to kill himself to stop the bad guy from revealing it. Whereas, really? Why? Why even have that?
Right. Well, exactly. If you cut that out, what would you have lost?
The more interesting thing, I think, would have been for perhaps the hit beast to
the hit beast to
come down and actually kidnap her and take her back up there to hold hostage against this guy, you know, attacking the mothership in some way.
There you go.
Interesting.
I think that's a lot more
interesting
because it makes her involved then.
There you go.
And not just hanging around.
That's interesting, on Earth, for him
to show up again.
Mm-hmm. Of course, then we've written the character of the little, you know,
little brother out, but you could come back to it somehow.
But he didn't really.
Oh, you mean like for all the interaction stuff with Beta? I'm not saying they have to take out the Beta stuff.
Where he jumps on the thing and starts trying to learn how to fly the starfighters.
Yeah,
you know, which is basically kind of you know.
I would miss that.
You wouldn't?
No. I mean, I get it, but you could just as well. There's other ways you could have written it. He could have just been gone, and then she could have been kidnapped. They could have taken the whole Beta thing out, though the Beta thing was interesting. Kidnapped her, which was a more conventional thing. The Beta thing is an interesting conceit. I'm just saying there are inherent problems to executing it well that I think they didn't necessarily accomplish. Not to its complete detriment, but it was just like,
there's more they could have done. What they did was okay.
Yeah. I don't disagree at all.
Right.
I mean,
it was okay.
I think you're right.
But it feels like there was more there. But once again, the balancing, if it would have been more, would have taken, who knows? So.
Yeah. I mean, could not, you know, why leave the Beta in it so that they don't know that Alex is gone? Well, couldn't Alex just have gone?
Yeah, exactly.
And written a note? Yeah.
Or just go, because already, you know, Robert Price Centauri didn't give a crap. It's like, come on, you come and you think, okay, fine, you're in, you're flying, see you, bye, I'm done, you know?
Yeah.
So why would they care so much to have him replaced? And then, of course, why would the thing take so long to gestate? What if he was discovered, you know, sooner? Why did, you know, there's so many questions inherent in there. There's interesting technology, interesting ideas, but so many things it seems it would have been thought out a little differently by the aliens if they did that.
Right.
Unless there was another compelling reason for, you know, maybe, you know, a prime directive of some sort.
Robert Preston can change his face by rubbing a red rag on it. Why does this thing need to lay in Alex's bed for, you know, almost a day before it looks like him?
Well, like a slug.
Yeah.
He looked like there goes your slug thing. Maybe there's a whole slug thing going on.
Well, didn't he looked a little bit like one of those Planet of the Apes Under the Earth people. Beneath the Planet of the Apes people.
He looked like he was molting.
Yes.
He did.
No, I think that was the point. Wasn't it?
Or he was like a cave creature.
I don't know what he was. Yeah, but he was molting in some kind of way. And he just had to form. He reminds me, there was a, I don't even remember if it was this, it was a pilot, well, a TV movie called The Questor Tapes. With Robert Forster and Mike Farrell, which was done shortly. It was early 70s. And I think Questor, when he was forming, was kind of like that. No. They stuck the ears and the eyes on him. Completely different.
What was he, a Mr. Potato Head?
Read up on the Questor tapes. It's actually pretty interesting. It was written by Gene Roddenberry.
Oh, really?
Executive produced by him. Yeah, the idea was that Questor was a robot that was... you got to read about it. If you can ever find it, it is interesting science fiction.
Hmm.
It was pretty cool. It winds up on Mount Ararat.
Well, who doesn't?
Of all places.
All the important stuff happens there.
Well, it's related to that, so.
All right. The cool kids.
All the cool kids hang out on Mount Ararat. And on that note, we're going to wrap up this current segment of Film Grok. We've been doing The Last Starfighter this week. This was fun.
Definitely.
It was The Last Starfighter, but we'll be doing more Film Groks, right?
Oh, absolutely! Yeah.
And did you like the chips and the popcorn?
Woohoo!
I hope we weren't too.
Oh yeah, craft service was awesome.
The craft service was great.
Thank you, craft service.
I don't know if I would hit the popcorn again.
That was Gladys.
But that was
Gladys
great.
Gladys helped us out.
There, and they've got the girl behind the omelet bar. Awesome! Did you see her?
It's like she has four arms. The way she moves with the toppings and throwing them in the eggs.
I wasn't looking at her arms. I'm just saying.
She did have a cool hat on.
She was a Centauri. What are you talking about? And on that note, this has been...
Jim Usterman.
And...
Duncan K. Fraser.
And Serge Dalpierre. And this has been Film Grok. See ya.